Members Willa? Vice Chair Young?
Present.
Chair Driscoll?
Present. Thank you. A quorum of the committee is present, and this hearing is now called to order. This is the public hearing of the Committee on Transportation and Public Utilities regarding Bill Number 250001, Bill Number 250487, and Resolution Number 250109. Ms. McDonald, will you please read the title of the bills?
Bill Number 250001, authorizing the Procurement Commissioner to enter into agreements to purchase electricity, natural gas, and motor fuel for use by the city and city facilities and vehicles, including agreements that obligate payment for delivery of such energy supplies in future fiscal years, all under certain terms and conditions. Bill Number 250487, authorizing the Procurement Commissioner on behalf of the city to enter into an agreement with the Philadelphia Energy Authority to purchase electricity and certain attributes and benefits related to the generation of such electricity from Abe's Run Solar, LLC, for use in connection with city facilities, all under certain terms and conditions. And Resolution Number 250109, authorizing the Council Committee on Transportation and Public Utilities to hold hearings to investigate the potential locations of new intercity bus terminals in the city of Philadelphia.
Ms. McDonald, will you please call the first panel we have to testify this morning on Bill Number 250001?
Madeline Hsu.
Good morning. Please state your name for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Driscoll and members of the committee. My name is Madeline Hsu and I serve as the City Energy Manager for the City of Philadelphia and the Office of Sustainability's Division of Energy and Climate Solutions. I'm here in support of Bill Number 250001, sponsored by Council President Johnson and Council Member. This bill authorizes the purchase of electricity, natural gas, and vehicle fuel for the city and its facilities to be delivered through. In 2010, Council authorized the city to make electricity purchases for fiscal year 2011 through fiscal year 2014. In 2012, Council extended this authorization to fiscal year 2015 and has continued granting additional authorizations in subsequent years. Executive Order Number 6-10 authorized the creation of a City Energy Manager and created an Electricity Supply Advisory Committee. This committee meets quarterly to review the energy purchasing strategies. The City Energy Manager, reporting through the Office of Sustainability, serves as the primary manager of the procurement of all energy forms on behalf of the city, including but not limited to electricity, natural gas, and vehicle fuel for the General Aviation and Water Funds. The energy procurement work is guided by the city's Municipal Energy Master Plan and through conversations with the city's Finance Department, Water Department, and the Philadelphia International Airport. The Division of Energy and Climate Solutions strives for the city's energy procurement to be low cost, to provide budget certainty, to have transparent pricing, and to do so by increasingly using clean and renewable energy. Examples of projects that provide greater budget certainty through diversification of the energy portfolio include renewable projects such as Adams Solar and energy conservation projects such as the Philly Street Lighting Improvement Program. The city government's electricity costs are significant, and costs for all three funds, general, aviation, and water, averaged to $58 million over the previous three fiscal years. The cost to the general fund, including street lighting and signals, for fiscal year 2024 was approximately $28 million. The electricity supply portion of the total bill is about two-thirds of the total electricity cost. The city has successfully managed supply costs by purchasing in the wholesale electricity markets and staggering purchases to limit the risk of paying a premium for electricity. The proposed ordinance would authorize the city to make agreements for the delivery of electricity through fiscal year 2028 through a state-regulated licensed service provider. The city's licensed service provider was selected through a competitive process and acts as the city's agent in making purchases in the regional electricity marketplace. In addition to electricity purchases, the city purchases natural gas and vehicle fuel from the competitive market for its largest buildings and accounts. The city government's competitively purchased natural gas costs are significant, and the costs for all three city funds were approximately $4.1 million in fiscal year 2024. The cost to the general fund was approximately $1.4 million. The city government's vehicle fuel costs are also significant, and the cost for all three funds, general, aviation, and water, was approximately $17.5 million in fiscal year 2024. The cost to the general fund in fiscal year 24 was $14.3 million. escalations in energy prices over the next several years. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Member Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, can you give us the grid that we're speaking of, the general parameters for which we are purchasing this particular energy?
Yes, so we are in the PJM electricity grid, and so our grid stretches from Pennsylvania down to North Carolina and then all the way west to Chicago is only part of Illinois, so Indiana. So, and then also D.C., so it's 13 states plus D.C.
But I meant the area in Philadelphia.
Oh, sorry, it's just for municipally owned facilities.
Okay. Yep. And that is because we are in the Center City grid that we separate this. For cost savings?
Yes, so this is just for the procurement for electricity, natural gas, fuel to run city-owned buildings. So it's not for residents we're not purchasing on behalf of residents. It's only for operating our city-owned facilities.
How long have we been purchasing it this way?
Since 2010.
And help me with the reason why we don't just get it from PECO.
So we purchase through third-party supply because we're able to hedge years in advance. Yes, so we get budget stability and then some cost savings.
All right, thank you.
And we appreciate the efforts for the cost savings because, as you know, which PTW, PECO, and water rates are all projected to go up this year. And in a tough economy, this is the time when you really need to pull the trigger on this. No further questions from the members of this panel, and there being no other panelists to testify on bill number 250001, we will move on to bill number 250487. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the first panel to testify this morning on bill number 250487?
Madeline Chu.
Hello again. good afternoon. I'm Madeline Chu, and I serve as the City Energy Manager for the City of Philadelphia in the Office of Sustainability's Division of Energy and Climate Solutions. I'm here in support of Bill number 250487, which authorizes the city to enter into an agreement with the Philadelphia Energy Authority to purchase renewable electricity on behalf of the city from the Abe's Run Solar Facility located in Clearfield County, Pennsylvania. The Division of Energy and Climate Solutions is responsible for implementation of the Municipal Energy Master Plan, which outlines four goals for sustainable municipal operations. Goals include reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 50% from the city's built environment, reducing energy use from buildings by 20%, procuring 100% renewable electricity, and reducing your energy costs, all by 2030. Through a competitive RFP process, Abe's Run emerged as the only project that met all compliance requirements while offering competitive pricing. Building on the success of Adams Solar, it will increase the city's total procured renewable electricity to approximately 30%. This project meets all of our goals, delivering 20 megawatts of clean energy for the city and moving us 5% closer to our 100% renewable energy target. Additionally, it provides a fixed rate price hedge for 20 years, offering long-term budget stability and protecting the city from market volatility. If approved, the owner-operator, Oridan Power, a subsidiary of Mitsubishi Power Americas, will design, build, operate, and maintain the 20-megawatt solar facility. The city, through PEA, will purchase 100% of the energy and renewable energy attributes produced from the facility. For these reasons, we recommend the approval of Bill number 250487. Thank you for this opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Member Young.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Just have a question about this particular ordinance. How was, Abe's Run Solar selected? Was it an RFP process? Can you describe to us what that process looks like?
Yes, so we issued an RFP through the Philadelphia Energy Authority. I forget the exact number, but a number of companies responded to that RFP with a number of different projects that had varying lengths, amount of power being offered, and different pricing. And so through that, we evaluated all of those attributes and came contracting structure. So it's a power purchase agreement that the city, you know, has through the Philadelphia Energy Authority, and that project came online in early 2024.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Member Phelps?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Driscoll. I just wanted to know, what are the compliance items that you were satisfied with that Abe's fulfilled?
Yes, so it's a best in good faith efforts project, and so they outlined a economic opportunity implementation plan that outlined best in good faith efforts, where they, during their EPC contracting, they will include EOP targets for labor participation and workforce diversity into their EPC contracts as best in good faith efforts.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then just out of curiosity, what was your closest competitor to Abe's?
Yes. So the
and
closest,
why?
Yes, the closest competitor was another solar fields that was located in Ohio. However, they were not able to commit to our EOP requirements, so they were disqualified.
Sounds good to me. Thank you.
Hearing no further questions from members of this panel, Ms. McDonald, will you please call the second panel we have to testify this morning on bill number 250487.
Katie Gordolota.
Good morning. Please state your name for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Driscoll and members of the committee. I'm Katie Barlota, Vice President of Policy and Strategic Partnerships with the Philadelphia Energy Authority, or PEA. I'm testifying in support of Bill 250487 to authorize the city to enter into an agreement with PEA to purchase renewable electricity on its behalf from the Abe's Run Solar Facility in North Central PA. PEA is an independent municipal authority working to build a robust and equitable clean energy economy in Philadelphia. We enable project development for the city and the school district and run a variety of consumer and workforce programs that support the growth of our market and our communities. To date, we have supported over $1 billion in energy projects and created 8,400 jobs. PEA works closely with the Office of Sustainability, or OOS, to fulfill its normal course of business, evaluating and pursuing cost-effective energy procurement strategies that align with the goals of the Municipal Energy Master Plan. In particular, PEA provides capabilities the city does not have on its own, including holding long-term contracts for energy procurement for projects just like Abe's Run Solar. PEA provides energy, deal structure, and contracting expertise to support the city's robust energy procurement strategy that Maddie outlined earlier. Selected through a competitive bid process, the 20-megawatt Abe's Run Solar Power Purchase Agreement, or PPA, will constitute 5% of the city's electricity supply. A PPA is a common structure used to develop and finance solar projects. The city commits to buying electricity from the array from a third-party owner who handles construction and all operations and maintenance of the system over the term of the 20-year contract. This is, as mentioned before, the city's second utility-scale PPA, after the 2024 Adams Solar Project, which was a great success. Through this procurement contract, the city will purchase electricity at a fixed rate, resulting in increased budget stability and reducing risk exposure to volatile energy markets. PEA supports the Abe's Run Solar Project as a key procurement strategy to ensure that the city's energy supply is clean, cost-controlled, and affordable for the long term. For these reasons, we ask for your support of Bill Number 250847. Sorry, 250487.
Chair recognizes Member Young.
Thank you. Just out of curiosity, if the Adams Solar Project was such a success, like what's the difference between that project and this project for them to not be the selected, vendor, I guess, for this?
So it's not necessarily an issue with the Adams Solar Project, but we just need to bring more of these projects online. So there's different developers, different locations, depends on land availability, who's willing to build them. But as Maddie mentioned before, this was, you know, our compliant and cost-effective proposal from the bunch. So
this is another opportunity for Philadelphia to move toward its 100% clean electricity goal.
Okay, thank you.
Hearing no further questions from members of this panel, and there being no other panels to testify on the bills before the committee, we will now transition to our public comment session on bills number 250001 and 250487. If you will be giving public comment on resolution number 250109 regarding the bus terminal, please sit tight. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the first person making public comment we have to testify this morning on bills before this committee today?
There are no names for public comment.
So I'd like to thank all of our witnesses for joining us today, and that will conclude the hearing, and we'll now go into the public meeting. There being no further questions from members of the committee and no other witnesses to testify on bills number 250001 and bill number 250487, I will ask if there's anyone else present in this hearing whose name we have failed to call and that wishes to offer testimony on the bills being considered today. Hearing none. I want to thank the panels and the witnesses for their participation today. We value your opinions. We will now go into a public meeting to consider the actions to be taken on the bills before this committee today before returning to the public meeting to discuss resolution 250109. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the roll to take attendance? Members that are in attendance, please indicate you are present when your name is called.
Councilmember Brooks, Councilmember Jones, Councilmember Phillips, Councilmember Squilla, Vice Chair Young, Chair Driscoll.
Present. The chair recognizes Council Member Squilla for a motion on bill number 250001.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the bill number 250001 be reported from this committee with a favorable recommendation and further move that the rules of council be suspended as with the first reading of this bill at the next session of council.
The chair notes for the record. The Council Member Jones seconds this motion. It has been moved and properly seconded that bill number 250001 be reported from this committee with a favorable recommendation and further moved that the rules of council be suspended to permit first reading of this bill at the next session of council. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. The ayes have it. The motion carries. Chair recognizes Councilman Squill for a motion on bill number 250487.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the bill number 250487 be reported to this committee with a favorable recommendation and further move that the rules of council be suspended as submit the first reading of this bill at the next session of council.
The chair notes for the record that Councilmember Young seconds this motion. It has been moved and properly seconded that the bill number 250487 be reported from this committee with a favorable recommendation and further moved that the rules of council be suspended to permit first reading of this bill at the next session of council. All those in favor of the motion will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. The motion carries. This concludes the public meeting of the Committee of Licenses and Inspection regarding bills number 250001 and 250487. We will now resume the public hearing on resolution 250109. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the roll to take attendance? Members that are in attendance, will you please indicate that you're present? Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Let me note for the record that the public transportation. This concludes the public meeting of the Committee of Public Transportation regarding bills number 250001 and 250487.
Councilmember Brooks, Councilmember Jones, Councilmember Phillips, Councilmember Squilla, Vice Chair Young, Chair Driscoll.
Present. Thank you. A quorum of the committee is present, and this hearing is now called to order. We have over 20 panelists here to testify on this resolution, so we ask that written testimony be summarized when possible and that repetitious comments be limited. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the first panel we have to testify this morning, this afternoon, on resolution 250109. But Before we start, I'd like to recognize Member Young.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank everyone in advance for being here to give us your testimony on what I think is a very important issue. You know, we're going to hear a lot of testimony from you all, from the public, about the importance of having the inner city bus terminal. And, you know, we wanted to do this to hear from you because we have some very important events coming up in our city in 2026. I think this resolution calling us here is so important that every single member of city council signed off on this resolution to hold this hearing because it's that critical to the future of our city. You know, our city is the largest city in the country that does not have a bus station, an inner city bus station for its passengers. If we're looking to celebrate, we're looking for people to come here to celebrate the semi-quincentennial, right, the 100th to 250th birthday of our country. We must roll out the red carpet, but instead of rolling out the red carpet on these buses, you know, you're rolling out, you know, dirty concrete. And we don't want visitors from all over the region and our country and our world to have to see that. We want to give them something to look forward to in 2026 as they come here. You know, we'll have the TED Democracy flagship event, of course, posted about FIFA World Cup, NCAA March Madness, MLB All-Star Game, PGA Championships, of course, and our typical Wow Wow Welcome America that we have to really celebrate the birthday of our nation. So we don't want things to get swept under the rug here. We want to be proactive as we invite the world to our city. And we want to make sure that our city can extend its best hand to those folks. These inner city bus terminals serve the most vulnerable populations, the low income, the disabled, the elderly. And we have to ensure that our most vulnerable populations have the means to travel safely throughout this country. And so, you know, I look forward to hearing the testimony of you all and how we can move our city forward, you know, to be the 21st century city, to be that world-class city that I know Philadelphia can be. Because, you know, I personally, you know, visited, you know, the site where the buses are. I mean, I go to the cleaners that's right there in that plaza, you know, about a couple times a month. And for me, I'm embarrassed by it. And I want to make sure that, you know, our city gets it right for the future. And listening to you all will help us make sure that we get it right. So thank you for being here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Member Young, thank you for your leadership on this. And thank you for those insightful comments. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the first panel for testimony?
John Mondlach. Available for questions is Nicola Mems from the Office of Transportation and Infrastructure Systems and Richard Montanez from the Streets Department.
Good afternoon, members of the Committee on Transportation and Public Utilities. My name is John Mondlach. I'm the First Deputy and Chief of Staff in the Department of Planning and Development. I'm joined by Kathleen Grady, Deputy of Strategic Initiatives and Executive Administration in the Department of Planning and Development, Mason Austin, Director of Transportation Planning at the City of Philadelphia Planning Commission, Nicola Mems, Transit Fares Program Director, and Richard Montanez, to my right, Deputy Streets Commissioner. I'm here to testify on the ongoing work by the city staff to help improve conditions for inner-city bus passengers in Philadelphia and to secure a long-term facility to support inner-city bus travel. But first, I'd like to give a brief overview of how we arrived at our current position. For more than 35 years, up until the end of 2025, the majority of regularly scheduled intercity bus trips in Philadelphia stopped at the Greyhound station at 1001 Filbert Street. In 2023, Greyhound terminated its lease on that building in keeping with its parent company's business model of divesting itself of real estate holdings and obligations, meaning they sold their real estate assets and they canceled their leases wherever possible. And they've done that nationwide. Peter Pan bus lines, March Trailways, and Fullington Trolleys, which were subtenants to Greyhound, also ceased operations at 1001 Filbert Street at that same time, June 2023. Following an initial move to 6th and Market, the city shifted operations to Spring Garden in November of 2023. The shift was based on the availability of manageable curb space, access to public transit and interstate highway on and off ramps, the ability to flexibly accommodate a facility of this size near Center City. In spring 2024, Mayor Parker charged staff with charged us to provide real short-term improvements to bus riders of the neighborhood, identify options to increase capacity for 2026, and develop a thoughtful long-term solution of which Philadelphia can be proud. Intercity bus carriers are currently operating curbside on Spring Garden Street between North Front and North Second in Northern Liberties, with several carriers permitted curbside on Schuylkill Avenue between Walnut and Chestnut Streets in University City. The City of Philadelphia contracts with DRWC, Delaware River Waterfront Corporation, to supply personnel referred to as ambassadors to greet and orient arriving and departing intercity bus patrons on Spring Garden Street to provide safe, clean, and comfortable bathroom facilities located on Noble Street, south of Spring Garden between Front and North Beach. Staff with the Office of Transportation Infrastructure Systems, OTIS, and the Streets Department, the Managing Director's Office, are working to improve bus operations on Spring Garden. Goals include providing additional and more easily accessible amenities while addressing the safety and security concerns of intercity bus passengers and the broader community by moving all or most operations out of the right-of-way. We are in the process of developing options based on available off-street locations for community and intercity bus carrier review and feedback. In preparation for 2026, the Department of Planning and Development, in coordination with OTIS, Streets, and Commerce, is working to develop bus operations that can accommodate the increased bus volume expected, ensure that they are centrally located, provide welcoming and dignified amenities, have easy access to interstate and ADA accessible transit, and serve until the creation of a long-term facility. Guiding criteria used for the interim location are sites that are near accessible public transit, sites that have space for waiting areas for riders to include bathrooms and sheltering from inclement weather, sites that can accommodate on-site sales ticketing since not everybody buys their ticket online, sites that have easy access to highways with minimal time spent on neighborhood streets, and sites that have proximity to businesses such as retail, restaurants, and cafes. City staff have taken a data-driven approach to identify potential locations using a multi-step process to determine the feasibility of sites. First, staff internally completed a GIS analysis to create a potential universe of sites that met certain criteria, including within a quarter mile of an off-street SEPTA station in the metro network or a regional rail station serving more than one line, lots that are at least 7,000 square feet, sites that can accommodate or able to create wide enough widths for a bus turning radius, sites that are ideally owned by the city or another municipal entity, and sites that can launch in time to meet the 2026 event needs. Based on the technical requirements, 120 sites were identified. The list was narrowed to 6 potential sites based on programmatic goals, site configurations, and specific site attributes. The city engaged a consulting firm to complete a traffic impact analysis for each site. The scope of work includes driveway analysis, roadway analysis, traffic impacts, bicycle pedestrian access, ADA access assessment, and an evaluation of transit connectivity and feasibility and recommendations for drop-off and pickup locations. This work is underway, and the department expects the work to be completed by summer. Using this information, the city will continue to narrow the list of feasible sites and begin conversations with communities who could be impacted. Community engagement will include potential neighbors to the site, bus carriers, and other large institutions. The city is also working diligently to secure a site for the development of a long-term intercity bus facility. In support of this effort, the Planning Commission pursued and was awarded a Transportation and Community Development Initiative grant, a TCDI grant, for planning to assess potential sites and provide a framework for final site inspection. City staff conducted another comprehensive analysis of parcels across the city using similar criteria as the interim site, but with larger size requirements that would accommodate a more comprehensive facility, either standalone or as part of a larger development project. For this search, staff looked at sites that are currently or vacant were in use as parking service parking lots, including both publicly and privately owned sites near high-frequency ADA-accessible transit. Among these sites, locations within or near Center City with safe and well-amenitized pedestrian environments and with reasonably close highway access were prioritized. Lots with existing development plans or with prohibitively high cost of acquisition were eliminated. The top six sites on that list have been provided to the TCDI-funded consultant for further analysis and feasibility impacts. As those analyses proceed, city staff will work to conduct necessary outreach, both citywide and targeted, to neighborhoods directly adjacent to potential sites. Because staff want to ensure that communities hear directly from us, and only after the viability of sites are confirmed, we will not be naming specific sites at this time, but a first round of engagement will be underway this fall with another in the spring of 2026. The consultant report will recommend 1 to 3 sites for further analysis, planning and negotiation, with final selection planned for the following year. Intercity bus travel is an important mode of transportation for the city of Philadelphia, providing a low-cost travel option for Philadelphians and visitors to our city. We understand that this work requires attention to the needs of nearby neighbors, residential and businesses, bus passengers, and carriers themselves. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to answer questions that you might have.
Chair recognizes Member Young.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your testimony, Mr. Monlock. I really appreciate it. Are those six sites that are being looked at for the short term and the long term, are they the same six sites?
They are not identical.
All right. And can you tell us what are the differences in, I mean, you went through the testimony, but what are what are the key differences that would that make you select those six temporary sites versus six long-term sites?
One or two differences would be the long-term site would need to be larger because we're anticipating the need for a much bigger facility long-term that would require a lot of infrastructure improvement and things like that. I think the other difference would be the availability needs to be perpetual on the long-term site, but it doesn't necessarily need to be perpetual on the interim site. And that's really what I can think of now as a big distinguishing factor. There very well may be others that our consultants are looking at or folks could add a little bit later as they come up.
And how do some of our peer cities, generate revenue or charge the bus facilities, the bus operators, for using some of those facilities?
I can't tell you how others. I know folks on the team and Rich may have been to other cities. I know we've toured other cities. I can tell you that we are hoping to introduce an ordinance that allows us to codify a system of chargebacks that we hope to introduce to have conversations over the summer and solidify what we are doing. But I don't think I can qualify myself to speak to what other cities are doing by way of revenue generation.
So can you describe to us what we are doing as a city regarding the curbside drop-off, the permits necessary for the operators, any fees they pay, and things like that for us?
I'm sorry?
Can you describe to us what the current situation is with the bus operators regarding the curbside drop-off, any fees they pay, and any permits that are necessary and things like that?
Yeah, we do. I think if someone from Otis can come up, they can give you a more detailed answer, but we do have agreements with some of the carriers to provide compensation for the work, and we're looking to renew those. I believe they've expired, and we're looking to renegotiate those right now.
Richard Monson is Deputy Commissioner of Streets. Yes, all the carriers are issue a permit to pull curbside by this per city code. So as such, they do pay a fee for that. We're utilizing that fee to then pay for the amenities such as restrooms, the ambassadors, and all that. So it's a pass-through back to DRWC to provide the amenities they're providing.
So it's just a curbside permit. There's no additional charges they have to pay in order to, outside of the doing business in the city of Philadelphia, there's no explicit, inner city bus operator fee or something like that that the city would charge them for the privilege of using the public right away?
Not terribly.
Okay. When it comes to the, I guess most of my questions are about other cities and what we've done. So I'm not sure if anyone can help answer. I don't know if the consultants are here that can answer those questions. But when we look at what other cities have been doing, like in Boston, particularly Boston, like Boston is the peer city that I think of that is an older colonial city, just like Philadelphia, has some of the same challenges that we have with our streetscape and our grid, things like that. Like, can we talk about why we are in this position now versus what some of the other cities have done in the past? Like, we relied on a private entity like Greyhound to be in charge of our inner city bus terminals, and other cities have not. And so you just talk to us about like what that that thinking is, and why I guess we're kind of why we're left in this situation now because of that private entity decided to divest its assets.
I think the only thing I could respond to that is up until summer of 2023, it was working. We had a system that worked, not without any complaints, but it generally did work. Most of the buses did go through that location, and there would have been no point really to create an alternative situation, and probably would not have been well received by anybody if we did that. And I also would note that they had a legal right to terminate their lease. That was not the end of the term, and so it was a little bit surprising. And maybe y'all remember, for a bit, everyone assumed that it was the Sixers that kicked them out of that site. And I read about that many times in the paper and couldn't believe it. We went after the Sixers, like, well, you're fine. You just bought another site. And they're like, we had nothing to do with it. They want it out. And then, sure enough, we understood that bus carriers are being bought up by investors, and their goal is to limit costs. And so if they had assets, they sold the assets and took the money. If they had leases, they terminated, and they had a legal right to terminate this lease, and that's what they did. And so I don't know, should we have been more proactively responsible to know that that happened, or to really jump on that in 2023? Maybe, but we didn't, and this is where we're at.
Yeah, so when did we find out that this lease was going to be terminated, and then how long after was it terminated?
I can only speak to myself that I found out a month or two before the termination, so I found out right about when it happened. I don't know if anybody has a different answer.
I mean, I just think they just left us holding back, essentially, and we're here scrambling, trying to figure out what to do when we have these literally world-class events coming to our city. So I'm trying to figure out how, as we as a city, I guess why I asked about the fees and things like that, like how can we as a city hold some of those operators accountable, particularly for they left us, again, holding this mess that we are dealing with.
And I just want to add a little bit of more detail there and share. So my name is Nicola Mamos. I'm the Transit Affairs Program Director with the Managing Director's Office. And I meet regularly with all of the carriers so that we can have more collaboration and awareness of needs and issues. And on the cost sharing piece, we certainly want to enter into agreements with the carriers to share the cost of operating the inner city bus operations in the immediate, but also in the long term. And so those are ongoing conversations. We're working on a cost estimate of what that's going to actually cost to operate, and also plan for the future. And many of them have already articulated to me that they're interested in partnering with us and that they want to move forward with agreements. We just want to be transparent in how we're coming up with our cost estimates. We want to make sure we're providing additional amenities so that we are addressing concerns of the community and also the bus patrons. And then once we have a good idea of what that's going to look like, move forward with those agreements and have that cost sharing structure in place. And then, as John Monluck indicated, we are also working on introducing an ordinance through legislation to have a more longer term solution so that we can start thinking about how we as a city provide a world-class terminal for folks to come to Philadelphia. So all of that is in progress, and actively partnering with the carriers to implement that moving forward.
Thank you.
the attendance of Member Kendra Brooks, and a chair recognizes Member Jones.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sitting here, Member Young, having a flashback, not about myself, but about my son who went to Florida, and that's 1,700 miles across the country. The first couple of times me and my wife took him down, it was a fun road trip. Drove, stopped off in the Carolinas. We bought things, fireworks, things like that. After the fifth or sixth time, it stopped being fun. And so his frequent trips home, we would often put him on a bus, which required him to travel across the country. And I put my son, my baby boy, on a bus. And when he came home after graduation, he was a grown man. The trip actually was a part of his growing up. But what I remember about that bus station often, that there was a mix of crossroads of people. A lot of them were college students just like him. Some of them were more in need, poorer people, that this was their only means to get from point A to point B. And I ask now, based on the current system, back then you had amenities. If you had to go to the bathroom, if the bus was delayed, if it was inclement weather, if those things happened, there was at least a shelter to be warm. Security, another issue, because everybody that comes to a bus stop, sometimes they have their reasons. But if you were being harassed, approached, sometimes predators go there, you had security there to take that responsibility. I ask now, on these curbside pickups, what happens in inclement weather? What happens if a bus is delayed? Who is responsible for clearing the pathway so that people don't slip and fall and hurt themselves? How does a city, how are we abdicating that kind of role when everybody doesn't get to fly first class? There's a group of people that this is their only means. So I guess where did we fall short in our policy not to, do we assume that with any license that wants to pick up curbside, what are the responsibilities they have?
Permit allows them to put curbside. The carriers, again, the city uses that those funds to give back to DRWC, who then maintains the area, keeps it clean, keeps it clear snow by using their own gators and all that. So our biggest partner in this would be the DRWC, who's been assisting us and providing cleaning the bathrooms, cleaning the area, keeping the area free of litter and things like that.
What happens when a bus gets canceled or delayed significantly?
So, in this case, a lot of them wait under Spring Garden, which is keeps them out of the rain underneath I-95 at Spring Garden. A lot of patrons wait there at the SEPTA station. Others, there is a small waiting room for tickets. I believe it holds about 10 people who wait there.
They wait under the bridge?
Yes. Underneath I-95 at Spring Garden at the SEPTA stations.
And just to add a little bit to what Rich Monson has shared, part of what we want to do is, well, we acknowledge first and foremost that it could be a lot better, and that's what we really want to move towards, is improving conditions on Spring Garden while we find an interim and then a long-term site. So as part of, like, improving conditions on Spring Garden, what we really would like to do is move off street into private property that we lease, and then that we have placement of waiting room trailers. So our goal is to have two waiting room trailers, so enough space for all the folks and using any of the carriers to access, in addition to co-locating a bathroom facility for those folks, and all of that would be ADA accessible. I will say that Peter Pan does lease space on Spring Garden. It's a small space, but they do let other folks use the space. So. If anybody does need to sit down, depending on their needs, that is available to them. But for the most part, folks are waiting under the overpass. And again, we want to make that better and improve that. And that's part of our planning work right now on Spring Garden.
In any of their business models, are we a profitable stop? specified it. Is Philly A important stop?
I won't speak for the carriers, but I will say, just in my understanding of servicing Philadelphia, it is a really great market. It's on the Northeast Corridor, between D.C. and New York City, and so it is certainly important, and they want to see us make investments, and they want to collaborate with us on making investments. So I would say yes, but I also defer to the carriers to speak to that from a business standpoint.
I just want to thank Member Young for kind of elevating this issue, particularly in light of our celebration coming, that everybody doesn't get to come into Philadelphia Airport first class. Some people find their way to experience our city humping backpacks, and we need to accommodate them as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Member Phillips.
Thank you, Chairman Driscoll. So, in your testimony, you mentioned that we had a site for travel, which is the Greyhound station. However, what I want to note is that it was only for, Greyhound, Peter Pan, and whatever people that Greyhound contracted. It wasn't an inner city space. Well, the space that you're looking to, find, is that going to, because there was always the Chinatown buses. They never worked in Greyhound. They never were in the Greyhound station, I don't believe. Well, some of them were, but I don't think a lot of them were. Once you get this inner city space for busing, is the plan to have and regulate all buses to go into this one space and it can no longer be curbside?
Yeah, so it's a very good point. The old station, I think there was maybe four major carriers working, but not all of them were using that site. Chinatown used 11th Street and still does. Other carriers used other places on the sidewalk. So the goal would be to aggregate as many of the big carriers as we can, but we also need to be aware that there are quite a few people bringing passengers into Philly and picking up passengers in Philly. So we need to think about if a site we identify maybe is a great site but can't accommodate everybody, then maybe there needs to be a couple sites with some overflow. So I don't know that I can tell you that every single one of them will be in our site, but I think you sort of work towards that goal and see how many you can get, and then if there needs to be a couple here and there, like right now we have a couple that stop on Schuylkill Avenue in West Philly. It's not significant, but it adds to the volume without necessarily requiring us to build a facility that's so big that it becomes just a problem or impossible.
And even Megabus in University City, near the 30th Street, they've never used that site when it was
correct
there. So I just think about, what's the goal here, right?
Yeah.
Is the goal to bring everyone into one space, or is the goal to just make sure that there's great accommodations everywhere, regardless if it's curbside or if it's
The honest answer is the goal is to pull as many as we can, but really it's to do it right and do it in the least disruptive way. And if that means a couple of sites, that means a couple of sites. And I don't think we know the answer to that, but it's definitely something we're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to echo the point that I think that there should be some level of standards that have to be held in order to have your bus be a curbside space. That point I do agree with. Whether or not I just hope it doesn't impact, pedestrian space when you do that. So that's what I think about. Last question I had for you is just, I know you're going to be working with some consultants after you just got this federal grant to kind of do studies. I just want to get a better sense of, in that grant application, did you describe a timeline? As I'm used to the city of Philadelphia always looking and investigating to things, but I'm not used to the city having a strong timeline on when they should have their findings completed, when they should have execution, when execution should begin. So how do we go from brainstorming phase to planning now to execution? Do you have a timeline for that?
There is a timeline for the TCDI grant, which is the end of fiscal 26. So about a year from now, maybe a little more, a year, 14 months or so.
And what do you foresee after you did this study to figure out what spaces and parcels are available for inner city bus terminal? What do you foresee as the timeline after that?
That will depend on the site. Some sites will likely require much more investment in infrastructure, and it could be, I mean, it's going to be years. This is not a normal development project that you can do in 2 years, so it's going to be more than 2 years, but I think it really depends on the characteristics of the site to determine exactly how many years and how much, but I can only say more than two.
So you're saying Member Young, who called this hearing, would be able to get a report from you all by the end of 2026 on those findings from that?
Yeah, for the long-term permanent solution, yes.
All right. Seems like a long time, but all right, thank you.
Chair recognizes Member Brooks.
Thank you so much. So Councilmember Jones kind of sparked something in me, and I think about the time as a mom coming from wherever on the bus with my children, and it's a stop in the middle of the night. It's a rest stop, and everyone gets off the bus. One place I remember, Salisbury, Maryland, you go into a gas station and use the bathroom. I take all my little children. At the time, I had three. Then load back on a bus to get back on. I remember one time, the bus, the connecting bus, wasn't there. So we had to take our things off and stand on the side in this gas station and wait for them to find another bus to take us to the rest of our route. I can't imagine that happening here in Philadelphia, under the underpass in Spring Garden. So when I heard that the station was closed, I had a lot of phone calls in my office about this as well. And it's been a couple of years now. My question was about timeline too, because I'm certain now I don't have those same struggles, but I'm certain there are other families that are trying to get from place to place that are experiencing this. And you know, we have this impression as this city of brotherly love. I can't imagine another parent under the underpass at Spring Garden with three kids in the middle of the night waiting for the next bus to connect. I feel like, you know, as we think through this, it has to be some immediate solutions. And I've seen folks at 30th Street with kids, which is scary. And what are we doing? Like, what is the timeline is important, but is there any way for us to expedite that? Because safety is of importance. And as we get ready, 2026 is one thing. I'm talking about the reality of families that are trying to travel from here to there. And what does safety look like in Philadelphia? And currently, these stops don't seem like a safe solution for me. Actually, I do have a daughter that's away in college. She's in Norfolk State, and we opt to use Amtrak because I can't be bothered with this bus confusion. But I also realize I'm at a point of privilege, and I can make a choice not to use the bus and opt to take the train because it's a little bit more expensive, or fly her back home if it's an emergency. So I would really like to know, like, what can we do to kind of expedite this and all these things being taken in consideration? I heard some really good things about the trailer options and all that. But what about now? We've already been in this influx for several years now, and I'm really concerned about even before 2026. Like, people are traveling today. This story that I'm telling is happening to somebody today, not just in Philadelphia, but across the country, you know, because, you know, transportation has failed some people. And I've experienced it myself, and this was many years ago. So, like, are we aware of any other major cities that do not have or have these type of terminals that we could replicate and make them much safer? I think some of the locations we have are very questionable, especially when I saw people at 30th Street unloaded the bus. That was kind of right off the... That didn't seem safe. And did we find any equitable locations where these terminals to be? I heard you say there were six particular terminals, and I would wonder what the infrastructure looks like besides the bathroom and shelter. What would it be like if a parent with two children, small children, is it feasible for them to be there with multiple folks that are unloading the bus that could have, what, 50, 60 people on it? And that's one of my concerns. Because to me, it's a quality of life issue. And I would like for us to make sure that we're thinking through all of these little things. I do appreciate Councilmember Jones talking about, you know, his situation. But I immediately, like I said, was brought back to my experiences of having to ride the bus. And I hope that we're looking through that lens about families, that this is their only option to go travel and visit when we have other options now. So I hope I was kind of clear in the direction I was going on with that.
I think you were. Council member, I just summarize that there are things we want to do right now, and Nicola mentioned a couple, and she could talk more to improve the situation exactly where it is right now, with off-street waiting rooms, and we're open to other suggestions that can make it better. That standard, we want to continue at whatever site we select for 2026, in the interim site. And then long term, as I said, is the one that's going to take years. We'll hopefully have plenty of time to do it right and just get all the amenities that we need and make sure that everything is thought for and accounted for. So there isn't a wait for 10 years to make it better. The idea to make it better is do now. And again, Nicola mentioned some of that. And if you'd like, we can, I think, talk more about what those are.
I did hear some of the suggestions, but the timeline was of my concern. I'm thinking about, like, what about, right? Like, this is happening to someone now. I'm saying I had the experience. So, like, what I'm hearing happening here in Philadelphia is much worse than I experienced it while I was in Salisbury, Maryland. I can't think of other rest stops, you know, stops where the bus did. And Philadelphia can't be that experience for folks, you know, as we talk about growing, tourism and just options for Philadelphia, it can't be a point of horror for a family traveling for whatever reason. And I would love to kind of talk more to that. We don't have to do it right now on the record, but Councilmember Jones just triggered some memories in my mind, and I would wonder what our solutions in the immediate for people that are traveling.
Member Scrolla.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. And I know we said it was a surprise that they left. I mean, I think there's been plans in the city for over 10 years of a permanent station and understanding why that didn't happen. I think we knew they were leaving once they sold their property years ago. And I think the goal was to have an interim place. And I know we rapidly responded to Market Street initially and had that there. It didn't work out. Moved it to Spring Garden and Delaware Avenue, which is not a great location, and have other ideas. But I think part of the issue and concern is that the full-blown plan and the trust from the community that are receiving these locations. We had another possible location in Old City that had some other issues with the park services. But I think part of the concern is people want to see a long-term plan, an interim plan, because it's hard to trust that anything we do on an interim basis will not be forever. And I get concerns from my constituents, as I received with you all, about the challenge in that. People do want and need a place for transit to operate. We all know the street is not the best place for that, right? We do all know now that this is an effort that is being made by the city to find a location, an interim location, until we have a grand location that we could then have all these transportation buses and other providers go to. But if we are looking at a wide range of interim places, how do those people know that that is not going to be, once it goes there, ever move, because nobody else would want a location in their area? How do we convince them? How do we show them? How do we tell people that, yes, it's here, because right now it's in Spring Garden Street, and we have a lot of challenges with that. If it stays there for another 2 years, an interim space is, are we talking an interim space of 10 years and then a permanent space? How do we explain where it goes, where it is now, where the proposal could go, how long that is, and then when a permanent space would be available?
I think you hit the nail on the head, Councilman. I think that's what a lot of people are thinking, and I understand the trust issue, because I know that different things were said at different times, and they didn't come to fruition. So I totally understand that, and I'm sure you're going to hear about a lot of that today, and it's not wrong. What I can say is that we applied for the grant for a reason. We knew that we needed to do a thorough long-term strategy. We have a consultant evaluating sites right now because we know we need to take it seriously, and we need to try to not make the same missteps that we made leading up to this. And all we can do is share that as we develop it and reach conclusions and finish our analysis. And will there be people that don't trust us? Sure. And we're going to have to earn that trust back. And it's going to take time. But have that information to share today, which I'm sure is going to be a point of frustration for lots of folks.
And as you talk, as you say that, obviously we know there's going to be an interim space, whether it's the current one that's there, right, or another one. Is that, are we doing it parallel with an interim space and a permanent space that we're going to do? Are they parallel tracks? Is there something that we could say that, I don't know what the study's going to show or what areas are going to be there, but how do we, that's the question that I'm getting. Nobody knows, it seems like, and anytime you say something's temporary, people believe that temporary becomes permanent because it's done, yeah. We don't have to bother anybody else.
Yeah, so it is concurrently, although there's a much shorter time frame for figuring out the interim site. You know, that's something that we should have the information back this summer, so we should be able to talk about that in the fall, because we need to have that decision made before 2026. The long-term solution, we don't need to make this year. And so that will be on a longer timeline, but they will be running concurrent for now, yeah.
All right.
Member Young?
Just one quick question. So why are we prioritizing a municipally owned or public space versus going after or looking at a private space that is already available, already outfit for the things that we're, you know, trying to accomplish?
Well, there can be challenges. So if it's municipally owned, you cut through a lot of that negotiation that you have to have. Sites that are privately owned could be incredibly cost prohibitive. There was, as the councilman alluded to, a thought of moving to a site that had jurisdiction by the Park Service. And, on its surface, it seemed like, okay, it's a site that was built for buses, and why shouldn't buses be there? But there was huge community outrage over it, and there was also opposition from the National Park Service. So I think every site is unique, and the more likely we have an ownership interest that takes one issue off the table. If you're dealing with a property owner, a lot of property owners, they have their ideas of what they want to develop on the site, and it's often not a bus depot or a bus station. And so they're not necessarily interested. If they have other assets in the area, they would definitely not be interested. Often the cost can be prohibitive, the timeline can be long, so there are challenges. It's not to say that we wouldn't consider it, it just makes it harder. But it's preferable, just for the sake of simplicity, if it were government-owned.
Thank you.
Hearing no further questions, thank you for your testimony.
Oh, question. So, it's not like it's out of the question.
Correct.
You're saying it's easier if it was public loan, but we are still going to look at
it. It's not a litmus test. That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. McDonald, please call the next panel.
Jody Holton, Chris Valentin, Wendy Harvey Green.
for the record and receive your testimony.
Christopher Valentin. Good afternoon, Transportation and Public Utilities Committee Chair Driscoll, Vice Chair Young, Council Members Phillips, Jones, Squilla, and Brooks. I'm Chris Valentin, the Assistant Chief Operating Officer of Bus Operations at SEPTA. I'm pleased to be joined by Jody Holton, our Chief Planning and Strategy Officer. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of SEPTA on this important conversation regarding the location of Philadelphia's intercity bus terminal. We also want to thank the Philadelphia Planning Commission for including us as a stakeholder in this process. SEPTA fully supports this effort to identify a dedicated intercity bus facility. Intercity bus facility at the Greyhound Station was moved in July of 2023 from 10th and Filbert to the 600 block of Market Street. This sudden transition severely disrupted SEPTA operations, the flow of traffic, and the safety of pedestrians. This sudden shift also rendered ineffective the specially designated red-painted bus lanes, which were a critical infrastructure investment by the city and PennDOT that aimed to improve transit efficiency in a congested corridor. Instead of facilitating traffic flow, these lanes became long-term parking zones for buses, private vehicles, taxis, and rideshare services. The resulting congestion created unsafe conditions for SEPTA operators and customers, pedestrians, bicyclists, and intercity bus users. Specific challenges for SEPTA included transit stops that were obstructed by idling intercity buses and cars, crosswalks being blocked by intercity buses encroaching on intersections, and intercity bus workers loading luggage streetside on Market Street during rush hour. These issues slowed SEPTA travel on a major arterial route and negatively impacted service reliability and accessibility for our customers. SEPTA was forced to discontinue the bus stop at 6th and Market Street due to the mounting safety concerns raised by our employees. This closure eliminated direct customer access to key landmarks such as the Liberty Bell, Independence Mall, the National Constitution Center, along with adjacent businesses. After months of operational chaos, intercity bus services were relocated to the 200 block of Spring Garden Street. While the move alleviated pressure on Market Street, new challenges emerged. The current location compromises our Route 43 bus stop outside of Spring Garden Station on the L. The current intercity bus zone also occupies a staging zone SEPTA uses for emergency shuttle buses during L outages. This limits our ability to respond swiftly to service disruption on this vital transit line. Late next year, the shuttle staging area will become even more necessary to the city's transit network as I-95 reconstruction begins at Spring Garden Station, and shuttles will be needed more frequently to handle construction-related outages on the L. Intercity buses are an important part of our region's transportation network, and SEPTA fully supports the city's efforts to identify an appropriate location for a permanent terminal. We understand that locating a new terminal in a safe, accessible, and centrally located site meets the needs of our transportation network users will be challenging. SEPTA's off-street bus terminals, which are our loops and transit centers, are at capacity, and we face our own operational challenges securing on-street space for layovers in the city's congested street grid. Additionally, ongoing construction projects and frequent scheduled and unscheduled disruptions require SEPTA to repeatedly relocate layover locations on our busiest routes. This instability renders an on-street intercity terminal inadvisable. The ideal location for the terminal should provide a dedicated off-street facility equipped with areas for passenger drop-offs, pickups, waiting areas, safe boarding and alighting for all intercity coaches. The location and the new intercity bus terminal should also facilitate convenient access to the SEPTA system without disrupting existing transit operations and our hundreds of thousands of daily riders. An accessible connection to a nearby elevator-equipped SEPTA station would make the new intercity bus terminal a true gateway to the city and link intercity bus travelers with neighborhoods, attractions, and employment centers throughout our region's robust transit network. Growing up as a transit-dependent Philadelphian, I deeply value affordable regional mobility options like intercity buses. However, the integration into the infrastructure must prioritize safety, minimize congestion, and ensure reliability for all transit users. A dedicated intercity bus facility is urgently needed, one that is strategically located to balance operational efficiency, pedestrian safety, and connectivity to regional attractions and transit services. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and we look forward to further collaboration with the city and other stakeholders on this important matter. We're available for questions.
Thank you.
I just have one question for you. Just you talked about the disruption in your operations because of the idling vehicles, rideshare cars, et cetera. Can you just give us, in your opinion, what type of infrastructure is necessary to handle the pickup and drop-off of the passengers, given that you operate a bus system? You have plenty of terminals throughout the city. What type of infrastructure do you think the city should be looking for when looking for a long-term solution?
I think from an operational perspective, our businesses are different. We have a frequency where there's a cadence of people coming in every 10 to 15 minutes. Where Council Member Brooks had talked about laying over places, having long-term waiting areas. I think that's very important, those types of amenities, waiting rooms, security, having places to stow things. I remember being a customer at the Filbert Street Station, they had lockers, things that we generally wouldn't have. So I think areas for them to queue where our folks just kind of line up real quickly, bunch up, get on the bus. They have queuing areas to offload luggage. I think those are the type of amenities that differ from our service to theirs, and so that's something they need to consider in their infrastructure. I don't know if Jody, you have anything.
Our operations, our layover locations are much quicker and need to have that throughput, whereas they tend to sit and they load luggage potentially on both sides, and then you have a lot of the Uber and the Lyfts or friends and family picking up, dropping off, so they definitely need space for parking or for, you know, having that moment to pick up your friend's luggage as you take them in a car somewhere else.
Right, it's getting to the airport, you know. The departures and arrivals, how you have that. We don't really have that on our system much.
And how important is access to SEPTA? How important is access to SEPTA for those inner city bus riders in order to access the rest of our city?
I think it's a major. It's really what makes us a connected city. You wouldn't want to cut off any section of the city. You want to make it equally accessible to everyone. Again, I was a rider. I rode to Bloomsburg University to visit my sister. It's a five-hour trip. I mean, I caught the 47 bus to the 8th and Market and walked over. So I understand that a lot of the folks that depend on that Greyhound or those inner-city bus services depend on us as well. So there has to be a connectivity between those two to have a functional network.
Thank you. You know, you're just talking about the bus. My first freshman year in college, I went to Kutztown University. I said, I catch the Bieber bus. Unfortunately, we're not they went bankrupt by 2019. But that was the only bus that got us back and forth, students from Philadelphia, to Kutztown University. And so, you know, without, you know, those types of facilities, you know, it has a major disruption on the education of the students of Philadelphia residents to get to some of those Commonwealth University schools. Like, we rely on that. So, just wanted to touch on the importance of that. And so, are there any other questions of these witnesses by members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you so much for your testimony here today. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the next panel to testify?
Professor Joseph Schweiderman, Micah Fielder, and Benjamin Shi. Professor Schweiderman and Micah Fielder are joining us virtually.
Yes, this is Joe Schweiderman. Should I begin?
Yes, please, sir. Please state your name again and begin with your testimony.
Yes, I am Joe Schweiderman. I am a professor at DePaul University in Chicago. I direct urban planning, a think tank at DePaul. I am also the editor of a national publication called Inner City Bus E-News, which covers the industry as well as having an annual report on inner city bus I've done for about 20 years. So I spend much of my time as a researcher in policy looking at inner city bus. And I had a chance to visit the spring a garden location. Went through the old terminal many times, so I'm quite familiar with the setting. And for one, I want to say I'm really impressed with the conversation at this hearing about the trade-offs and issues and so forth. So it's gratifying to see a city take it this seriously, because it is a major issue. The main thing I want to indicate, I'm going to be brief here, is that the era of privately run terminals is rapidly ending. And Philadelphia, you know, lost, of course, its private terminal. Chicago is grappling with a similar issue. We're a couple years behind you in terms of the crisis coming to our city. And one by one, local governments, county governments are taking actions to solve this problem. And I just want to point out that all up and down the Northeast Corridor, just briefly give some examples. You know, Boston at South Station is kind of a state-run bus terminal right at South Station. New York, the Port Authority is taking action for a brand new Port Authority terminal. In Baltimore, the municipal government, city government, worked several years ago with Greyhound to create a terminal south of downtown. And Washington has the Union Station entity providing a quality bus terminal there. So every city that's of size has some governmental leadership in this, with the few exceptions we mentioned. And I think Philadelphia was unusual for the private station lasting as long as it did. I just want to give you a couple other examples. Atlanta is really a case example of what a good new terminal can mean. And I encourage the city to go down there to see it. It was built with city support, working with the state government, right next to the MARTA transit system. And it's like a little miniature airport, you might say, with seats with power outlets and LCD screens above and so forth. Milwaukee. So almost around the country, we're seeing leadership on this issue, but it's sometimes county government, sometimes transit authorities doing leadership, sometimes port authorities. But it really is an issue of our time that private bus companies just aren't willing to budget for bus stations, which have generated a lot of property tax liability. So we're seeing not only costs of running the stations, but pretty serious property tax bills, over $100,000 in some cases, that the industry just can no longer support. The acquisition of Greyhound by Flix has sort of accelerated this, but I commend Philadelphia for just its leadership to study the options and find a solution. So thank you for the chance to testify.
Thank you, Professor. Mr. Fielder, please state your name and give it your testimony.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Micah Fiedler. First off, I would like to say thank you for allowing me to speak on this panel. I am a transportation advocate and currently a graduate student in urban planning at Tufts University. Last year, I had the privilege of working with activists from all over Philadelphia in our fight for better accommodations at the existing bus pickup location and for a plan to move forward with a long-term solution to the bus terminal issue. Now, I am gratified to see that the City Council is taking the first steps on the long road towards providing proper service for Philadelphia's bus riders. As you heard from Professor Schwederman before me, the inner city bus industry has continued to grow, even through the bankruptcy of Megabus last year. With rail service continuing unreliability along the Northeast Corridor, more and more people are likely to turn to inner city buses to go between New York and D.C. Yet, Philadelphia, the central hub of that corridor, is the only major city to not service riders along the line with a proper bus terminal. These facilities provide critical protection from the elements during extreme weather and encourage intermodality between companies and transit modes. A centrally located, well-attended building encourages safe use of the network and can even provide business development opportunities for the surrounding plots. 1 million passengers will pass through Philadelphia every year. They should be greeted by more than a curbside. Inspired by this clear need and encouraged by the City Council's initiative, I ran a basic sustainability analysis on potential locations for an intercity bus terminal. That poster you'll see to my right, I believe. This analysis looked at the vacant lots and parking lots within the metro area and graded them based on factors ranging from population density to land value approximations to, importantly, proximity to critical transit infrastructure such as highways, train stations, and other bus stations. For you today, I would like to submit this analysis along with a list of the highest scoring plots. You may notice from this analysis that a vast majority of the suitable locations are in Center City. It makes sense, as it is the location with the highest transit connectivity in the region, and it's bound by two major interstates. The Spring Garden neighborhood shows up twice, as does Logan Square. 30th Street Station has two top candidate plots on its own. I ask that you see this analysis as a guide for further feasibility research. I concede that the best terminal location may not be on this list, but the factors that play into this analysis should point you in the right direction towards Center City. Thank you, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fiedler. Mr. Shea, please state your name and begin with your testimony.
My name is Benjamin Shi, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself as a private citizen and not for past and current employers. From 2023 to November 2024, I was with the city's Office of Transportation Infrastructure Systems, OTIS, where I was tasked on managing the transportation and logistics planning for the city's interstate bus terminal, both for the temporary Spring Garden terminal as well for numerous other proposed sites. I worked hand-in-hand with PPA, Streets, and PCPC, and also helped facilitate relationships with the interstate bus operators as they navigate the city's permitting and planning process to relocate their bus stops to Spring Garden. I was on the streets every day in the first week, putting up the signage, you know, coordinating with the ambassadors and doing all that. Planning for establishing a new interstate bus terminal is a daunting task that, you know, few cities have the appetite for, but it is simply a non-negotiable feature of any major city, period. Philadelphia is at the midway point of the Northeast Quarter and also the nexus for travel to the Midwest. In other words, a bus terminal here has built-in growth potential to be a major hub for traffic and already serves as one for many carriers. Interstate buses reach numerous destinations in PA where now rail or air services do not go and will not reach anytime soon. This includes major cities like Allentown, Reading, Scranton, State College, South Jersey, and Delaware. But unlike Amtrak or airports, interstate buses receive zero subsidies from the federal government to ensure these critical destinations can continue to be served. The disruption of service to Allentown when Beaver Toys went bankrupt in 2019, as Councilmember Young mentioned, was a major inconvenience to travelers. The 2026 festivities alone would indeed bring a lot more traffic, but it also requires that a physically larger space in Spring Garden must be built, or else carriers will have no choice but to park in any open curb they can find, furthering confusion of riders and angry neighbors. So, you know, what would it take to basically stand up a terminal basically in less than a year, right? When you think about the features that it would take to stand this up, you would need around 6 to 8 bus bays, portable toilets, an enclosed waiting area and ticket stall, and some social security. But all of this together would not cost more than maybe $10 million at startup. Indeed, many bus companies have experience with starting up this inner facility through portable ticket stands and the like. But any possible plan, no matter how cheap, requires a strong oversight, coordination, permitting power, and enforcement of the city to ensure this will happen. Without it, any carrier could choose to opt out of the location and go rogue by finding another open curbside space to park their buses. And this activity is still happening occasionally right now, and I feel has gone underforced by PPA and PBD. So my opinion on basically the long-term location, if we want to invest more money past 2026, is the same was as it is now. 30th Street Station is still the best possible site to invest in the future interstate bus terminal. Co-location of interstate bus and rail is the norm in Boston, DC, LA, Pittsburgh, and countless other peer cities. The built-in ridership base of the college students in University City and long-distance commuters is unbeatable. In addition, the site was already identified as the best long-term facility in the 2016 30th Street Station District Plan, co-written by the City, PennDOT, Amtrak, Drexel, and Brandywine Realty Trust as the authoritative master plan to guide the development of the 30th Street District. However, there are also major challenges to the site, which require more assistance in political capital than we have seen thus far. The exact site identified in the 2016 plan, which is the parking deck next to the Sierra Center, would likely require structural reinforcement to host multiple buses according to structural plans. Most daunting is the fact that there are zero land parcel around 30th Street Station owned by local public authorities. Everything there is owned by institutions like Brandywine, Drexel, and Amtrak. Talks to simply temporarily reopen the curb space on JFK Boulevard to interstate buses were met with large assistance from those institutions, even though the Streets Department does hold its statutory power to regulate curbside space. But none of these obstacles are insurmountable. Philadelphia is simply at the place where peer cities like DC were a decade ago. In my opinion, Philadelphia has a prime opportunity to plan for and finance a permanent terminal on the Cira Center parking deck. The city has many bargaining chips available to get the institutions back to the table, the most powerful of which is the Keystone Opportunity Zone designation that was set over 20 years ago by the city and state at 30th Street lots. With the explosion of development in Schuylkill Yards, it has already benefited these same stakeholders. KOC has already done its job at 30th Street, and especially with the proposed reduction in BIRT and wage tax, the future of KOC should be called into the question. The next evolution for the district should be improving critical infrastructure like bus terminals using tax increment financing to get there. Having this local base of funding allows the city to apply for federal grants from the Department of Transportation, like the Build Grant, with a very strong application in order to see this terminal become reality. All this can be done a lot sooner than one might think, but requires a strong and dedicated city hall to get there. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I do have a question for Professor Schweiderman. You're still on. Can you talk to us about what other cities, I mean, you mentioned that other cities are moving away from the private model and beginning to own these assets. Can you talk to us about how these assets are have become revenue generating for the cities and how the cities are able to keep the, you know, the operations of these facilities going?
Yeah, really good question. And the typical way, kind of two models, in some cases, they find a private operator to manage the terminal with a lease, and their, you know, concession fees can come from food service and other things. The usual method to generate revenue is to charge buses either per bus departure, scaled by the size of the bus. You know, so a 54-seat bus would be a different fee than a smaller van. Sometimes they're scaled to per departure or per passenger. So it would be kind of like an, you know, an airport arrangement where it's paid per passenger. There might be still some subsidy involved for some cities. That's something that's being looked at. Chicago, for example, if they had a public terminal, could it pay for itself? There is a lot of activity in Philadelphia. Analysis I did in January showed there's 56 daily buses from Philadelphia to New York during the slow season. So you can look at those kind of fees. An example could be, $40 per bus departure as a fee, and that can help generate some pretty good revenue.
Thank you. When you mention these types of fees, are they typically, how are they, I guess I'm trying to figure out the, we have different municipal authorities, like you said, port authorities and things like that, that run some of the facilities. In your opinion, is it better for the municipality itself to run the facility, or is it to put that off on a third-party authority?
Well, I do think bus stations need to be seen as regional assets, and that's the case we're trying to make here in Chicago, that this is not just a Chicago problem. The station serves everybody. Of course, like Philadelphia International Airport, I believe that's a city entity, but it clearly has a regional role. So I think it's reasonable to expect a region to help pay for a bus terminal, but the politics of that can be difficult. We do see, you know, Port Authority of New York is a perfect institution because they have long history of providing transportation services for the full region. But another case of this is city government taking the lead, and I think they can often move more quickly than when you have sort of city suburban collaborations.
Thank you. One last question for you. Have you seen any federal grant dollars out there for this type of infrastructure development for municipalities or authorities?
Yeah, we have. We've seen Washington kind of wake up to this and see that we have to sort of get over this hang up that we don't want to subsidize a private business, which was often sort of a fallback position that people have. And I think people now see that InterCity Bus really is alone and having to fight for itself for terminals. So we have public involvement in rail and in air, because airports are heavily get planning support from cities. And so I think that those barriers have fallen. And there's been changes in some of the federal funding guidance to loosen up about that and to push public transit operators to be more accommodating to inner city bus at, you know, public transit terminals too. So the momentum is on the bus industry side, but the clock is ticking in a lot of cases.
Thank you so much. Are there any other questions of these witnesses on this panel? Chair recognizes Councilmember Phillips.
I just want to briefly say that I'm glad that Planning and Development is still here. Kathleen and John are still here. Gonna hope they're here for the rest of the hearing, because Micah has presented 18 potential sites. I think he needs to be on your planning team. And not only that, hopefully, you know, he can help you figure out how to expedite this study. So come to Philadelphia, Micah, so we need you. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Phillips. Are there any other questions for members of this panel? Mr. Shi, I do have one question for you. You mentioned 30th Street, and you heard the professor's comment about how there's a trend to move more toward municipal or authority ownership. But you talked about the KOZs and that, those opportunities. Just in your experience and your, you know, how can, just tell us what, how can 30th Street Station, how can our city benefit by having that, this intercity bus terminal at 30th Street in the private, being managed or owned by the land by private industry versus the city of Philadelphia?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, it's a great location, but I do recognize the challenge that there is literally, the city has no stake in any parcels of issue right now. It's all Drexel, Brandywine, and Amtrak. And, you know, those relationships, right, has always been on an as-need basis instead of sort of being, you know, very proactive. I would say that the 2016 30th Street plan really already set the groundwork to at least talk about a bus station there. And, you know, as far as I know, they're still publicly committed to that. And so I think that a great intermediary would be the parking authority, actually, you know, as an authority that, you know, has leverage to go after acquisition of parcels, you know, for their interests and for their purposes, right? They could also do the same thing here, you know, and apply sort of their policies and their statutory power as an intermediary. And then you could do something like a ground lease, right, with the city or, you know, any other financing technique that really could help sort of at least, you know, build that sort of, you know, statutory fee on the buses, right? But then also, you know, have that financing power in place so that, you know, we can all work hand in hand with the existing institutions we have. And we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. I think the parking authority does show, you know, promise in that model, I think, yeah.
Thank you so much. Are there any other questions of these witnesses for this panel? Seeing none, I want to thank you all for your testimony, particularly those joining us virtually. Thank you so much for taking an interest in the city of Philadelphia. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Will the clerk please call the next witnesses in the next panel?
Lou Myers.
Good afternoon, Mr. Myers. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Lou Myers. I am Director of Policy, Research, and Impact for the American Bus Association based out of Washington, D.C. So thank you to the council for the time. Just going to give a few remarks on support for this intercity bus. Intercity bus and intermodal facilities are essential hubs. These facilities serve as critical transfer points, enabling passengers to seamlessly connect between transportation modes to reach their final destinations. They are vital to a well-functioning and integrated regional and national transportation network. Safe and closed facilities enhance passenger experience and accessibility. A secure and closed terminal ensures passenger safety, comfort, and convenience, especially during transfers between carriers. These facilities are significantly more accommodating for passengers with disabilities, mobility challenges, or those experiencing service disruptions, ensuring compliance with ADA standards, and promoting equitable access. Intermodal facilities drive economic development. Facilities like Union Station in Washington, D.C. highlight the economic potential, generating over $35 million annually through intercity bus, charter, and tour bus operations, parking, and terminal access fees. Similar investment in Philadelphia can serve as an economic engine while enhancing mobility. Uncertainty and relocation erode passenger confidence. The frequent relocation of intercity bus operations in recent years has undermined passenger trust, complicated wayfinding, and led to service reductions. As a result, some carriers have ceased servicing Philadelphia, disrupting key connections to cities like Atlantic City, Washington, D.C., New York, and Pittsburgh. These changes have disconnected intercity bus services from broader transportation systems, increasing travel costs and reducing convenience for passengers. Charter bus parking is critical for tourism and operations. Since 2016, Philadelphia's available motor coach parking has declined, with only one location currently serving the downtown area. A new joint-use facility would address this shortfall, supporting safe charter operations and promoting tourism and accommodating group travel and tour buses. Federal attention on travel and tourism infrastructure. The U.S. Department of Transportation is actively updating its national travel and tourism infrastructure and strategic plan. Philadelphia's approach to intermodal transportation and motor coach access will serve as a case study, either showcasing success or highlighting gaps in implementation and coordination. Motor coaches serve underserved communities. Intercity buses and motor coach remain one of the safest, most affordable transportation options for low-income and underserved communities. They play a vital role in ensuring equitable transportation access across all socioeconomic lines. Dual-use facilities support sustainability in small businesses. A combined intermodal and motor coach parking facility would not only promote sustainable transportation by encouraging mode shifts from personal vehicles, but will also support small, family-owned transportation businesses that form the backbone of intercity and charter bus operations. Lastly, I invite the council, the mayor's office, or whomever would like to come down to D.C. We could do a tour of Union Station to give an example of what a intercity intermodal facility that is profitable looks like. With that being said, I just want to thank the council again for their time.
Thank you so much for testifying today, Mr. Myers. I appreciate you being here, giving us your perspective from the industry. One thing I find, I guess, fascinating in your testimony is that, Philadelphia, we're either going to be a case study for success or failure, essentially. And I hope that we are that case study for success on how we can move our city forward with this and be an example for other cities, for newer 21st century inner city bus terminals. The chair recognizes Council Member Phillips.
I just want to quickly also note that I'm really thankful that Council Member Young put this together. One of the things that gets me with the city of Philadelphia, particularly planning and development, is that until council members ask for hearings of this nature about the future of our city, we don't hear from that department. It's like we should constantly get presentations about what they're thinking, what they're doing, but we don't. And it's frustrating because we can't be a 21st century city if we're not constantly thinking about planning and we're not working together with that. So it just kind of undermines the fact that cities like D.C. is generating $35 million annually through the intercity bus, charter, and tour bus operations. I just want to get a better sense. You said you invited us for a tour, but I think they should go to the tour first if they haven't already. But I want to know, how is that possible? Like, what are they doing to get that $35 million revenue, detail-wise?
Just on a low level, bus slips, buses paid to come in and out of Union Station. And as the gentleman said, oftentimes they'll pay per passenger, not per bus. Then there's that economic impact with
curious about it, and if you could share any details with us, that would be awesome.
Appreciate you guys
posting. Thank you for coming down to Philadelphia.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you. I do have one more question for you. From the industry's perspective, why traditionally has the inner city bus travel with these private companies, why haven't they received the federal support that some of the other transportation modes have been receiving?
I might not be qualified to answer that directly, but I think that there has to be a greater focus on motor coach. I think when people think major transportation, they think air travel, train, and there's always been a disproportionate funding allocation to buses and motor coach. And so I think these type of hearings only amplify and bring to light the importance of having motor coach. If you think about it, planes can't land everywhere, trains can't transport everywhere, but buses do have a regional impact nationwide. And so, I think these are opportunities, and obviously coming from D.C. on Capitol Hill, we have the TNI committee, which is Transportation and Infrastructure. And so I think there might even be an opportunity to kind of get in front of that group to talk further about the need for motor coach. Just one last point, we do a lot of analysis and studies, and being on research, I'm privy to a lot of data. We have a mega decade coming up, which is going to be the World Cup. And so we need to start putting the infrastructure in place now to accommodate for what FIFA is estimating 8 million international travelers. They're going to start designating cities for which particular soccer clubs are going to be playing. And I imagine Philadelphia would be one of those major cities. And so that's just one example of the need to further invest in this critical discussion.
Thank you. I mean, that was kind of the premise of why I wanted to do this hearing, because we are a site for FIFA, and we do know that our location is critical to allow folks to travel Philadelphia to New York to Boston to D.C., right, to get to those matches to follow their teams. And so having inner-city bus terminal, inner-city bus routes is critical for those types of travelers, just for the easy convenience of it all, because everyone can't afford Amtrak, right, the Hollywood Amtrak. But, we could afford, a $30 ticket to get, to a match in Boston. So I just want to thank you again for being here and sharing your testimony from the front end.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks so much. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the next panel to testify?
Peter Picnelli, Nolia Calcano, and available for questions is Matthew Maglio and Francesca Friedman.
Thank you so much for being here today. Please state your name for the record and begin with your testimony.
Yes, actually it's Francesca Waldman, and I will be the one providing testimony.
Thank you.
No problem. So my name is Francesca Waldman. I am here on behalf of Flixbus and Greyhound. Good afternoon, I guess, Chairman Driscoll and Vice Chairman Young and members of the committee. Flixbus and Greyhound welcome the city's focus on developing plans for a permanent home for intercity bus service in Philadelphia and the infrastructure that the city and its residents deserve. We value our close collaboration with the Office of Transportation and Infrastructure Systems, the Department of Planning and Development, the City Planning Commission, the Streets Department, and the City Council to support current operations and provide active input on future planning. We are committed to working together with all stakeholders to deliver the best possible service for the City of Philadelphia. And we'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please proceed, sir.
Hello. Thank you very much. My name is Peter Picnelli. I am CEO of Peter Pan Bus Lines in Springfield, Massachusetts. I appreciate the opportunity here to talk about the importance of the bus terminal here in Philadelphia. And while I really promise to be brief, I think it's important that you understand the scope of our business and our industry to the city. I think it'll give you a good perspective, and I'm prepared to do that. First of all, Peter Pan, we're a family-owned business. We started 92 years ago by my grandfather. I'm third generation. My son over there is sitting. He's the fourth generation. We've been serving Philadelphia for 34 years. We run service to 100 communities in the Northeast, but none are more important than Philadelphia to us. Very important. Most of our passengers go from here to New York City and to Washington, D.C. We operate 25 daily trips midweek out of Philadelphia and also into Philadelphia. On weekends and holidays, we run more than 50 trips a day into and out of Philadelphia. I'd like to give you, we carry thousands of passengers every day, and the breakdown of our passengers, so for you to understand, 41% of our passengers are students, 26% of our passengers are seniors, 21% of our passengers are commuters, the rest are daily visitors. The most popular destinations out of Philadelphia are north to New York City and to Washington, D.C. Once passengers get to either of those two cities, they can connect with 2,800 cities throughout the United States. Amtrak, on the other hand, only services 500 cities. The average bus company visitor, when they come to Philadelphia, spend $125 per day on shopping, restaurants, etc. That does not include overnight stays in hotels. People take buses because there's a high frequency of service and they're very affordable fares. I think you would be surprised, Councilman, that according to the American Bus Association, more people ride buses in 2 weeks than take Amtrak in an entire year. We are a vital part of moving America, and we're a vital part of moving people in and out of Philadelphia. The average bus fare from Philly to New York City is $18. Train fare, and the bus takes 2 hours. The train takes 2 hours. It's exactly the same time frame. An Amtrak fare to New York City can be as high as $70. An Acela fare to New York City starts at $80. It's a significant difference cost for the consumer to travel by train or by bus. When we moved out of the Greyhound terminal, we saw an immediate drop of 47% when we moved from Filbert Street to Spring Garden. There's no amenities there. We even have porta potties that are about 100 yards away in a back alley. We do salute the city for working with us because we had very little time to move. I think we had 3 week notice to get out of the Greyhound terminal. We worked with the city to move to Market Street, and then that got too congested and they moved us to Spring Garden. The city was helpful to us, but the locations we now have are just not acceptable for our customer. Most of our customers take public transportation to the bus terminal. That's how they get there. There is 400% less frequency of public transportation to Spring Garden than there was to the Greyhound bus terminal. That's a huge problem for us. When we make it difficult for passengers to get to the bus terminal, we're really displacing passengers with disabilities, seniors, students, families with children. People depend on our service for all sorts of service. I mean, there are people that would not be able to go to college, wouldn't be able to go to college right here if it wasn't for the bus service we provide. Or the seniors who need medical service in Washington or New York, they wouldn't be able to get it if it wasn't for what we do. We provide a very necessary service. Philadelphia. This is a very interesting statistic that I'd like you to really think about. Out of the 100 cities we serve, and we serve every major city in the Northeast, Peter Pan sold more cash fares in Philadelphia than any other location, which tells me those customers did not have credit cards, which illustrates, I think, it's logical to assume they're less affluent. So the largest decline in sales we saw when we moved from Filbert Street to the from the Greyhound Terminal to Spring Garden were on cash sales. So what we've really done is we've taken advantage, or we've disadvantaged the most vulnerable in our city. And that's a real concern to us. When we also moved to Schuylkill near 30th Street Station, thankfully we were able to rebuild some of the business we've lost. But we're still at a negative. We're still at, you know, 10 to 15% less than we were when we were at the Greyhound Terminal by servicing both locations. The new bus terminal in Philadelphia has to be in Center City. That's where our customers want to take the bus. That's where it's most accessible for customers to take the bus. I heard Mr. Shi say 30th Street Station. We think that's an excellent option. We really do. We're actually working with the town, with the city of Providence right now to build an inner city bus terminal attached to the Amtrak station. It's a public-private partnership. It's a great way you can get something built cheaper, faster. We have experience with this, and we'd love to work with the city on it. Philly is an amazing city. It's one of the most amazing cities on the planet. It needs a better bus terminal. Our company's committed to Philadelphia. We're committed to providing first-class transportation, but we need to do a better job. People deserve a better bus terminal than what we have now, and they need a new bus terminal quickly. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Just how important is it for your business? Just you re-emphasize for us, like, how important is it for your business to be located in areas where there are other modes of transportation for your customers?
It's essential. That's where the biggest decline was. You know, we feed off each other. Our customer takes public transportation to the bus terminal. They just do. There's some that we call kiss and ride. They drive there. Well, here's another interesting point. If you take an Uber from City Center to Spring Garden, it's $15. That's almost the same amount of money it would take to take the bus ticket to New York City. You're doubling the cost for the customer. Who can least afford it?
I'll second that as well. One of the most important things that we also see is the same. Mostly people are taking public transportation to reach the bus, and ultimately that connection is not just, the current customer, right? But also thinking ahead. And again, what this is about is planning for the future as well. We're talking about a population of people where the car ownership is on the decline. More people are utilizing public transportation. This is the way of the future, and ultimately it will best serve not just our business, but the city, to have the connection between public transit and really any long-distance intercity transportation, including the bus.
One of the reasons, and I wish the professor had mentioned it, but one of the reasons that there are no standalone bus terminals, or not a ton left in the United States, we operate some, but one of the reasons there are a few is because we feed off each other through intermodals, and there are federal dollars out there that promote intermodalism. So the most successful terminals throughout the country are those that have trains, buses, transit buses, Ubers and taxis, all in one building. We feed off one another, and we all prosper. And that's what the best model is. And that's what I think Philadelphia, you guys, it's Philadelphia. I mean, this is Philadelphia, right?
We're the sixth largest city in the country.
I know, right? And for Peter Pan, it's the third largest bus route we have.
serve 100 cities. We love Philadelphia, and we're staying here. These people deserve better.
I agree. I agree. Any questions for members of this panel? Chair recognizes Councilmember Phillips.
I'll be quick so we can keep it going with the other panelists, but just wonderful to finally meet the Peter in the pan.
Well, so, I'm the third
generation. Yeah, third generation. And the son over there, right? Yeah. My gosh, what a family lineage.
He wants me gone so fast.
Oh, wow.
He wants to put me out to pasture.
I know. You got to keep the family business going. But I just want to just commend you for the work that you're doing. I just want to ask you just really quickly, if we did move to the 30th Street Station, I'm just trying to think about, like, what can we do now? Like, that's a future thing, according to the planning. What can we do now to make this easier for residents? Because it's starting to click to me why it'd be so much harder for folks to get down to. I actually just drove by there the other day. I was like, oh, wait, I'm about to do a hearing on this. So it was shocking.
We really wanted a temporary location underneath the underpass on 9th and Filbert. We thought it was ideal. It could hold about 6 or 7 buses underneath. It was close to the mall in facilities. There was great space there, but we were told we couldn't use it because the parking authority was moving their offices there. In my view, you could easily fit that out within 2 months, and you could move the bus terminal there. It's back in Center City. That's what I think you could do as a very quick temporary move. And it would have waiting rooms. It would have waiting rooms. Long term, I think 30th Street Station connecting it is a great option. It's what makes intermodal successful in other areas. I also like the old police station. I think that's a nice location as well. And I'll develop it for you. I'll buy it, I'll pay for it, and lease it back to the city. Yeah. And I'll get it done
you
quick.
You hear that, city? Peter
is ready to go.
I'm telling you, we'll do it. We've done it elsewhere. We're working in Providence to do it now.
I'll emphasize some things that folks have mentioned before that are really, I think, key for what's missing right now on Spring Garden, which are, again, Philly is a city that's in an area that gets what I call real weather. So having taken the bus actually down here from New York today, so yay on our actual service that we provide, and being out there in the rain, we really, really, really want to make sure that a city like Philadelphia has something that is not just under an overpass, but really has like a climatized waiting area. Y'all get snow. We get snow everywhere really in the Northeast. So, you know, snow, cold, but on the other side too, it gets hot. You know, we want to make sure folks are comfortable waiting when they're, you know, with their luggage, maybe with their kids also. And it's a hot day in the middle of summer.
And that's the part that we're missing. See, there's some point of privilege. I haven't taken a bus in a long time, but folks remember.
Like, what you're missing, Councilman.
Yeah.
We'll put you on the bus. I'll get you a
student. But I was going to say, it's like, you're right. Why would I want to stand outside while it's hot, while it's chilling cold? Yeah, I might need to get to New York, but the Greyhound, what it afforded is that you could sit in, you know, air conditioning and in the heat, you know, when it was cold. So, yeah, we got to think of something.
If you don't mind, in my temporary solution of 9th and Filbert, there's plenty of room we would build out for indoor waiting area. It would be sheltered from, the buses would be sheltered. It would be ideal for a temporary location short term until we build something somewhere else. In my view, that could be rebuilt. You could have a waiting room for 100 people at least, maybe more. And there's amenities there, and there's shelter for the buses. It would be a good temporary solution in the core.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's one reason why I wanted to emphasize, you know, if we are still looking at privately owned land, you know, because I think a public-private partnership in this could expedite, you know, this, you know, because we have no timeline, essentially, right? We don't know. But if we can look to the private market, the private sector to help us expedite this, I think that could be very useful. I know Mr. Shee talked about all of the incentives that are there that we are possibly available. So, you know, I would, you know, love to speed this up because time is of the essence when it comes to making sure that, you know, we continue to roll out the red carpet, you know, for our, you know, bus drivers. So, are there any other questions of these panelists?
Can I make one last statement?
Yes, sir.
Well, because I've listened to so many others. We pay a significant amount of money in terminals like Boston. We pay a per gate fee. We pay over $200,000 a year to use the Boston bus terminal. We use 7 gates there. We pay a departure fee, and we pay per gate, and then we also pay for any ticket counter space we have. Washington, D.C. is unusual. We actually pay per passenger. But in most cities, you pay a gate fee. You pay to use and own and operate from a gate, and you pay departure fees. We would give you all that information. And we also took a bus tour from Philadelphia with, I don't know, last year I participated on it, and there were a bunch of people from City Hall, and we took them on a tour. We went to Baltimore, we went to Washington, D.C., and showed them some other bus terminals. We're glad to do it again for the council.
Thank you so much. I'll be more than willing to take you up on that offer, so we'll be reaching out. So thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Ms. McDonald, will you please call the next panel?
Matt Rubin, Sydney Rex Road, and Hercules Grigos.
Looks like we have a few additions here. We also have Natalie McNeil, who is a business owner on Front Street.
Thank you so much. Just state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Sure. Thank you. Hi, my name is Natalie McNeil, and I'm the owner of Ends Hair Design and Day Spa. I have been in business for 38 years here in the city of Philadelphia. I have been located on the 600 block of Front Street for the last 15 years. Good afternoon, and thank you for allowing me to speak. I chose the neighborhood because it was peaceful and diverse and easy for our clients to access, especially with free parking. We've watched the area grow over the years, and we've welcomed the growth, but about a year ago, things changed dramatically when an inner-city bus stop was placed on our corner without any notice or communication. What followed has been a disruptive and honestly distressing. Strangers, some would stay for long periods of time, wash up in our bathrooms. They would pretend like they were getting their hair done, but really they were waiting for the buses. And so they would come in and sit and go ask to use our bathroom and sometimes get washed up in there. They were using our salon as a private bathroom. Some would stay for long periods of time. We started finding the paraphernalia and trash outside of our salon. One morning I arrived to find mattresses, food, clothing spread across the front of our businesses. It was overwhelming. For the first time in 15 years, we had to start locking our door. We've been here for 15 years. We've never had to lock our doors. During the daytime while we're working, you know, get fresh air. Clients like looking out. But once this bus came, then we had to lock the doors. And so we have now been having to keep our doors locked. So every client that comes in, we had to put a bell outside. So now we have to ring people in, lock the door as soon as they come in, and then do our clients and then re-lock the doors. We have learned, again, that without proper notice, that parking spots were going to be taken up on our block, 6 parking spots where they were going to put porta potties. And once we found out about that, we notified different, our council person and our state representatives. And fortunately, we were able to stop that so they did not put the toilets there on our block. I'm here today to say small businesses like mine deserve a voice. We are the fabric of this community. We want to grow with Northern Liberties, not to be pushed out of it. And please don't make decisions that put our safety and our livelihoods at risk. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Hi, I'm Sydney Rexroad. I'm a Northern Liberties resident, the former executive director of the Northern Liberties Neighbors Association, and I'm currently the executive director of the Northern Liberties Bid. I've been working on this issue since January of 2024, about a month after the city dropped bus operations on our sidewalks without any advance notice. In that time, I've worked with some really great folks from OTIS and the Planning and Development Department that I know are just doing their best in the bad situation that we've all found ourselves in. Northern Liberties has shown our openness to working with the city from the beginning. The NLNA immediately began documenting and reporting issues to the city and fielding complaints and questions from our community. We've even advised the city on some safety and operational strategies. It was a lot for a neighborhood organization with a paid staff of one, but we wanted to help. Unlike other neighborhoods that have been considered as potential hosts for bus operations, we said, yes, we will work with you, and we've done so ever since. The addition of bus operations to an area without the needed infrastructure has caused a lot of strain. Despite biweekly meetings between city and neighborhood representatives, many of the issues present from the beginning, like trash, pedestrian and bike safety, bad behavior from bus carriers, a lack of basic amenities for bus passengers, are ongoing. We continued working with the city even as it became clear that the resources needed to make this successful were not coming, and as the timeline for moving the buses out of the neighborhood shifted from 3 months to 9 to a year to the limbo that we're in now. Late last year, we were told that the city had made a plan to move bus operations, first to a medium-term interim site, then a long-term interim site where they would remain until a permanent bus depot can be built within the next decade or so. We have repeatedly asked questions about the selection process and timeline for these sites. The city has shared almost no information with us, while the talk of the medium-term site and moving from Northern Liberties both have stalled. I'm really proud of my community for the good faith effort that we put into making this work, but we have not been treated in kind. The city's most recent plan is to drop a few trailers into a parking lot shared with PennDOT's I-95 construction equipment and call it Philadelphia's InterCity Bus Station for the next 10 years. The NLNA and NLBID both formally oppose this plan, along with other community organizations, as it blatantly ignores the needs of both bus passengers and the needs of our community. I'd like to thank Councilmember Young for introducing this resolution, for inviting me to testify. I believe that City Council is essential for ensuring that we find a real solution that shows respect for bus passengers, Northern Liberties, and for Philadelphia.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Mr. Rubin.
Vice Chair Young and the rest of the members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Matt Rubin. I'm a 33-year Philly resident and a longtime board member of the Northern Liberties Neighbors Association. I'll be brief and would welcome follow-up questions. As Sydney has noted, we've worked in good faith with OTIS and the Department of Planning and Development. We are not NIMBYs. In fact, three of the five potential alternative sites I mentioned in my written testimony are in or on the border of our neighborhood. It's wrong to consider only Northern Liberties, but we're willing to listen to a sensible proposal if the city ever makes one. The officials we've dealt with are well-intentioned, but in our experience, the city's site vetting and decision-making process is opaque, dysfunctional, and irrational. A block from Spring Garden, a block on Callow Hill, is the Delaware River Waterfront Corporation's existing permanent bus facility. Climate-controlled, bathrooms with indoor plumbing, large waiting area, lighting, security, bus slips, easy highway access. They have repeatedly offered this to the city, and they have been repeatedly told no thanks. All the site needs is an ADA ramp up the driveway from the sidewalk. For less than the city has already spent trying and failing to manage the situation on Spring Garden, we all could have been spared the misery, disruption, and confusion of the past 18 months, and still the city says no to this as an interim solution. Same with other possible sites. In my experience, they rule them out based on bogus or fixable issues while letting everyone suffer from worse unsolvable problems on Spring Garden. And now, as Sydney noted, appear to be considering a truly awful plan for the next 10 years still on Spring Garden. In my view, council must force the city to open up the process and listen to reason. Next summer, as you know, bus volume will increase by an order of magnitude. Philly will be in the international spotlight. And in my view, the city is unprepared. A disaster is looming, and I urge council to act immediately for the good of bus riders, my community, and our city. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Griegel.
Good afternoon, Councilman Young, Councilman Phillips. Hercules Griegel here today on behalf of Northern Liberties Phase 1 Owner LLC and Northern Liberties Phase 2 Owner LLC. Owners of the property and approved development at 700 North Delaware Ave. The proposed development spans two full city blocks bounded by the 700 blocks of North Delaware to the east, North Front Street to the west, and the blocks of Brown Street to the north and Fairmount Avenue to the south. The better part of this decade, we have worked tirelessly with various city agencies, numerous community organizations, countless near neighbors, and many other third-party professionals to obtain approval to begin construction on this large-scale transformative residential development project consisting of two seven-story buildings with 466 units, landscaping right-of-way improvements, along with a pedestrian-focused retail promenade at Main Street, including 16,000 square feet of commercial retail with entrances facing 79 through 99 Spring Garden Street. Here today to express our opposition to the city's consideration of an interim or permanent intercity bus terminal at that location, quite literally across the street from our development. My clients have invested $222 million and continue to dedicate considerable resources and investment capital to that area. More importantly, I think placing an intercity transit facility with high volume of large bus traffic, making use of surrounding roads and major corridors directly adjacent to the newly created pedestrian-focused retail corridor, poses a significant safety threat on visitors, residents, and customers. I'm going to try to summarize the rest because I know we're low on time, but I just want to add that we spent considerable time, and I know there's been considerable work with Mr. Rubin, the bid, DRWC, and others to make sure that Delaware Ave becomes pedestrian-friendly and developable, and we're starting to see that planning come to life today. And there was lots of opposition to auto-oriented uses. The Planning Commission opposed at least two auto-oriented uses, maybe more along Delaware Avenue. My clients have joined in to work to create pedestrian-friendly retail access, and now introducing this large auto-oriented use, I think, is contrary to that planning and all that work we've done. So I would just my letter has been sent as the record, but I'll just close to say that we think the city should reconsider any proposal for 79 through 99 Spring Garden Street. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Just want to note that, you know, as the city continues to plan for the future, I would hope that there is a deeper involvement of the community of the RCOs in the planning process. Because to spring something like this on the community without notice, I mean, you know, you guys have expressed, you know, a lot of frustration with that. So I do hope that we as a city can do better in talking to the community about some of these future development plans. The chair recognizes Councilmember Phillips.
And I also want to see if we can get on record a response to your question from the city about why we did not use, I forget the location.
Intercity bus facility on Calla Hill Street.
There you go. Why was that not his sport? Just out of curiosity. So at some point, we'd like to get that up from the city. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Councilmember Ng, if I could just say one thing in response to your comment. The exchange that the two of you just recently had with the gentleman from Peter Pan, with his thoughts about possible sites, is far more transparent, opaque, and direct than any interaction we've had with the city in discussing potential sites in our neighborhood, let alone other potential sites in the city. And that's part of what our frustration is. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming down and for giving us your testimony on that. We really appreciate that as we move forward. Mr. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the next panel?
John Chin, Deborah McCarty, and Blake Carroll.
Thank you. And as you're coming up to present your testimony, we do have some written testimony that is submitted for the record. If you could summarize your testimony, we really appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. State your name and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon, Vice Chairman Young and nobody else is here. My name is Deborah McCarty, and I serve as co-chair of the Powhatan Village Civic Association Zoning Committee, and I'm here on behalf of the Civic Association. We believe that a permanent location for an inner-city bus terminal, which all buses utilize, not having them everywhere, is very much needed. Not that long ago, Bolt and Mega Buses utilized the 3,000 block of JFK Boulevard as their quote-unquote terminal. This use was a constant source of aggravation for many of us. These sources of aggravation and annoyances varied. Among other things, they included that awaiting passengers invariably blocked the footway, making it difficult for pedestrians to make their way through the maze. Vehicles blocked traffic lanes while dropping off, waiting to pick up, and then picking up the bus passengers. The fumes from idling buses made it miserable for any of us walking through or riding our bikes past that area. And the area was constantly trash-strewn with remnants of what appeared to be and were likely bus passengers' snack packages. These experiences and what has been observed at other locations inform our testimony today. While we take no position on a specific location in the city where terminals should be located, we strongly believe that wherever it is situated, certain factors should be adhered to and taken into consideration. These include error management laws and regulations should be aggressively enforced for all idling buses. Unfortunately, our observations that enforcement is lacking in this regard. This is not only a waste of fuel, the fumes are noxious and unnecessarily pollute our environment. No idling should be tolerated. An area for cars to pick up and drop off passengers should be provided such that car and bike travel lanes are not blocked. Enforcement for blocking these lanes has been irregular at best. All violators should be promptly ticketed. Something I haven't heard today is a secure bike storage area should be provided for bus ticket holders that ride their bike to and from the terminal. Also, a bike share station should be situated nearby. Folks use public transportation, but they also ride bikes. The terminal should be sited near public transportation. We think the Market Frankfurt L or the Broad Street Line are ideal. There should be bathroom facilities for bus ticket holders, maybe a barcode on the ticket that allows access just for those ticket holders so you don't have other folks using the facilities, if that's an issue. It should not be sited where residents will be disturbed by noise. The station grounds should be kept clean and trash-free at all times. And while it probably goes without saying, to avoid traffic jams, there should be adequate turning radius or radii for buses entering and exiting the station. Lastly, this all assumes there will be a sheltered area for passengers to wait for their bus. In summary, we contend that our great city does deserve a first-class intercity bus terminal. If the issues I've stated are taken into consideration when locating and operating said terminal, we believe it will be an asset for Philadelphia. Thank you for the opportunity to share what we believe should be taken into consideration when locating an intercity bus terminal. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chin.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Young. Thank you for having me here today. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on Bill Number 250109, which calls for hearings into potential locations for a new intercity bus terminal in the city of Philadelphia. For years, our community has endured the negative impacts of the Greyhound terminal's location at 10th and Filbert Streets. While we support the importance of intercity transit in connecting people across the region, the placement of the terminal adjacent to our neighborhood, particularly Chinatown, had come at significant cost to our community's health, safety, and quality of life. The buses cut through Chinatown, bringing increased traffic congestion, air pollution, and serious pedestrian safety concerns when the Greyhound bus terminal operated at 10th and Filbert Streets. These are just not inconveniences, but they were persistent disruptions that eroded the well-being and vitality of our neighborhood. The situation became so problematic that New Jersey Transit, one of the region's major transit providers, was forced to reroute 5 of their bus lines away from the Greyhound bus terminal due to what it described as unsafe conditions in 2022. According to New Jersey Transit, Senior Vice President of Bus Operations, the redesigned traffic pattern at the terminal forced buses to ride the curb or the sidewalk to complete turns and endanger drivers, employees, and passengers. He also noted the lack of a proper boarding area, which could force passengers to stand in active bus lanes. These are just not operational challenges, they're public safety hazards. So we believe in a logical and equitable solution is to relocate the intercity bus terminal to 30th Street Station as a major regional hub. It is already equipped to handle large volumes of travelers and offers the necessary infrastructure, multimodal connections, and space for safe, organized bus operations. The move would improve access for all Philadelphians and visitors while relieving the disproportionate burden currently placed on communities like ours. We urge City Council to prioritize safety, equity, and smart urban planning in its decision-making process. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Carroll.
Good afternoon, Councilmember Young. My name is Blake Carroll, Chair of the Transportation Committee, representing Logan Square Neighborhood Association, or LSNA. LSNA is committed to actively engaging with the City of Philadelphia, including this council, the mayor's office, to advocate for and contribute to the improvement of transportation options for all Philadelphians. We believe that a robust and well-planned transportation network is essential for the economic vitality and quality of life in our city. We also recognize the importance of Philadelphia as a welcoming city and one that provides easy connectivity to neighboring cities and regions. For many visitors, the inner city bus terminal serves as their first point of contact with Philadelphia. As such, its location, design, and functionality play a crucial role in shaping their initial impression of our city. A well-designed terminal can contribute significantly to a positive and welcoming experience. LSNA acknowledges that the 30th Street Station is already a significant hub for intercity travel, accommodating Amtrak, SEPTA Regional Rail, and many other transit modes. Given this existing infrastructure and its central location, we believe that is a logical location to explore as a potential site for a more permanent intercity bus terminal. We understand the complexities involved, but the potential benefits of co-location are substantial. While 30th Street lies outside our formal registered community organization boundaries, the development of a more permanent intercity bus terminal in that area will undoubtedly have implications for the Logan Square neighborhood and its residents. Therefore, we sincerely look forward to collaborating with the city to gain an understanding of how such a facility might be developed. Specifically, we are interested in working with the city to understand several key aspects: how a new terminal would integrate with existing transportation networks within the Logan Square area, including bus routes, bike lanes, and pedestrian walkways; how the design of the terminal can effectively mitigate any potentially negative impacts on traffic flow and pedestrian safety. We must ensure that increased bus traffic does not lead to increased congestion or compromise the safety of our streets. Lastly, we would like to understand how the terminal can be designed to provide essential basic amenities for travelers. The current situation with passengers often left waiting outside without adequate shelter, wet restrooms, or seating is simply unacceptable. A permanent terminal must address these deficiencies. In summary and conclusion, LSNA supports the exploration of a permanent intercity bus terminal solution, particularly at a location like 30th Street Station that offers existing intermodal connections. We are committed to working constructively with the city to ensure that any development in this area enhances the overall transportation network, minimizes negative impacts, and provides provides a welcoming and efficient experience for all travelers. We thank you and the council for considering our input and look forward to participating in this process.
Thank you so much. I have a question for Mr. Chen. You talked about, I guess, Chinatown's maybe resistance to the bus terminal there. Can you talk about, has there been, while the terminal was operating in October, any economic impact that it had on your neighborhood?
The economic impact that it may have was minimal. Mostly the bus passengers would arrive shortly before the buses would depart. And arriving buses, the passengers would depart fairly quickly after they entered the station. So it's pretty minimal. And I guess you're asking because you know Chinatown's a commercial district. So it has not seen, we have not seen the impact that we think that volume of buses that comes in the area should have.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for your testimony. I appreciate you taking your time out coming down here today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Of course. Ms. McDonald, will you please call the next panel?
Stephen Bronskill, Jackson Betts, Alex Malone, David Brownlee.
Thank you all for being here today. If we have received your written testimony, again, I'm just going to ask to summarize if you can. Whoever, please start, state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Vice Chair Young. My name is Stephen Bronsko. I'm the Coalition Manager for Transit for Philadelphia. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. Be concise here, I represent a coalition of almost 40 organizations focused on sustainable, reliable, and affordable public transportation. Just want to join all of the folks here in calling for urgency in relocating the inner city bus terminal to an off-street location that is accessible, respectful, and provides dignity and support and amenities for our riders. I really appreciate you and fellow council members sharing your personal stories of riding the bus. There have been over 1 million bus riders impacted since Greyhound closed in Center City Terminal, who have been dumped onto Market Street and now Spring Garden Street, with very minimal shelter or resources. Just to give you the scale of that problem, this has been unimaginably hard, particularly for Philadelphians who have disabilities. The current Spring Garden site features a single wheelchair pickup location, and the nearby L station lacks an elevator. And so Philadelphians with disabilities, nearly a quarter million of them, are at the forefront, should be prioritized in this work, in accessibility in a future terminal. This is something that we are also committed to, shelter, bathrooms, access to food and water, air conditioning and heat, to not block bus and bike lanes. The Spring Garden Corridor is one of a critical part of the city's bike network, and we need to make sure that we have accessibility measures in place. A PA system and support staff for communication, especially with riders with disabilities, and adequate support staff to assist passengers in a smooth travel experience. Operational funding, this is necessary to maintain the terminal's operations and services. Sustainable funding sources identified by the mayor's office and streets department to ensure the terminal's long-term viability, and a timeline for construction, a clear timeline to be established to provide transparency and accessibility to the community. Appreciate the committee's attention to this today. Just to summarize, Philadelphia requires a bus terminal that supports people, and we look forward to working with the council and the Parker administration to advocate for a permanent intercity bus station that all Philadelphians can be proud of. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you, Mr. Bronsko.
My name is David Brownlee. You already have the testimony from the Design Advocacy Group. I'm one of the vice chairs. DAG is a large community of architects, city planners, landscape architects, and others interested in promoting excellence and equity in the built environment. And it is simply the case that our disastrously unsuccessful intercity bus terminal has been on in our minds for a long time. And we welcome the attention of this committee and your attention, Councilman Young, to this problem. We've also welcomed the attention of City Council to city planning issues more generally. There's a lot to be done in that area. We think that the Director of City Planning, of Planning and Development, Jesse Lawrence, got it just about right when in a recent DAG meeting
He said that a visitor's arrival at an urban transit hub, like a bus station, really is a handshake with a new city. And it has to be said that when those use our bus station, and that includes Philadelphians, don't get a handshake, they get a sucker punch. It's a dreadful facility. We have it's an enormously urgent problem that we have to face before next spring. And I think we are all somewhat discomfited by the pace that's been laid out by our planning officials. We need to move extraordinarily rapidly. And we need to identify a site both for an interim and for a long-term solution. It would be nice if they could be the same place in terms of infrastructure, but we need to be able to put both of those ideas out there to get reaction very quickly. Very simply, the curbside sidewalk Spring Garden Street setup can't be fixed up, we think, even in the short run. That would be like putting lipstick on the face of a pig. We believe that we can do better, and that a number of other useful sites, including 30th Street, including the city-owned land around the roundhouse, can be identified and moved on expeditiously. So I've painted three alternative, if you will, metaphors for the future. A sucker punch, a painted pig, and a handshake. And Dag thinks we all deserve to be greeted with a handshake and a smile. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My name's Alex Malone. I'm the Transportation Committee co-chair of Fifth Square Advocacy. Some of these points have already been made, so I'm going to summarize my testimony for the sake of time. We have been involved in this since 2023, when the Greyhound Intercity Bus Terminal abruptly closed. That closure left thousands of travelers without access to basic necessities. They lack proper shelter, they have no restrooms, they lack food options, they have no seating, and they have no clear travel information. These individuals are not simply transitory visitors to be ignored. They're residents, they're students, they're seniors, they're low-income workers, and families. They have people who rely on intercity bus travel as their most affordable and often only viable transportation option. The conditions they've been left in are unacceptable, and that's why we've taken action. Fifth Square launched a citywide petition urging city government and the intercity bus operators to establish a proper terminal, one that includes essential amenities like shelter, seating, signage, ADA compliant facilities, public restrooms, and seamless connections to SEPTA and other transportation modes. The public response to that petition was swift and powerful. We got close to 700 Philadelphians who signed on with us and demanded that it be made clear that we must do better for our inner city bus riders. We also partnered with organizations such as Transit Forward Philadelphia, Liberty Resources, and Disabled in Action to conduct an on-site assessment of the current Spring Garden Street location, currently beneath I-95. What we found was deeply troubling. There's no basic infrastructure, no protections from the elements, a lack of ADA requirements, and most disturbingly, no access to clean drinking water. On an extremely hot day, our volunteers handed out water to waiting passengers, an act of basic human decency that should never be necessary in a city of our stature. The situation will only be made worse in the coming years as PennDOT still plans to go ahead with their ill-advised expansion and widening of I-95 through Center City and South Philadelphia, which will cause incalculable harm to the city and its residents. In addition, we collaborated with the Bicycle Coalition of Greater Philadelphia, the Delaware Valley Association of Regional Rail Passengers, and the Sunrise Movement to advocate for both short and long-term solutions. We strongly supported the interim use of the auto park garage in Old City as a safer, more appropriate location, while a permanent solution, preferably at 30th Street, was developed, turning the area around 30th Street into a true multimodal transportation hub, linking Philadelphia with the rest of the country. Let us be clear in this moment. A great city ensures that everyone, regardless of how they travel, is treated with dignity and respect. Intercity bus riders deserve nothing less than the standards we expect for subway, regional rail, or airline passengers. Fifth Square remains steadfast in this fight for the dignity of intercity bus passengers, and we thank you for your continued leadership and commitment to resolving this crisis with the urgency it deserves and the compassion that it morally requires.
Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Young and members of City Council. My name is Jackson Betts. I'm a member of the Fifth Square Transit Committee, a Fishtown resident, and a frequent intercity bus rider, having used services like Greyhound and Peter Pan to travel the country. Just in the past year, I visited Hartford, Connecticut, Dayton, Ohio, and Fall River, Massachusetts, among other places, by inner-city bus. Each of these three cities has a population less than a tenth of Philadelphia's, but as a bus passenger, I was treated far better in each of these places. Each of these cities has a real waiting room with heated facilities, air conditioning, bathrooms, and concession stands, easy connections to other local transit modes, and signage and staff to guide me on my journey. But in Philadelphia, I waited beneath a dank, noisy highway overpass. Philadelphia is a city with an extraordinary quality of life, and every day I'm glad to live here. But based on the conditions of our inner-city bus terminal at Front and Spring Garden, I wouldn't blame prospective workers, diners, nightlife enjoyers, residents, and others for arriving in our city by bus, taking one look, and turning around and leaving. We need to put our best foot forward, and there's no better place to start than our inner-city bus terminal. Thank you for introducing this measure.
Thank you. I just have one question for you, Mr. Best. So when you, you know, go to these other cities, these smaller cities, just tell us how you are greeted by, what's your first impression when you're going to these other cities versus when you come back home to Philadelphia?
Absolutely. All of these cities often offered transit facilities for their local transit agencies that were coordinated with the intercity bus terminals. So like Greyhound and Peter Pan would be coordinated with Amtrak, the local agencies, etc. So it was very easy to hop off the Greyhound bus or the Amtrak train or whatever that I was using, get on another bus to take me to the city center or whatever friend's house I was visiting, etc. They were very clean, extraordinary facilities. And Philadelphia has plenty of potential for facilities like that, some of which already exist today. I hope these could be developed for intercity bus passengers. Thank you
so much for that. And thank you all for your testimony. I appreciate that. Ms. McDonald, can you please call the next panel to testify?
Helena Gallant, Nico Meyering, Anthony Lanzalotti.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and begin with your testimony.
Hi, council member. My name is Nico Meyering, and I'm ready to give my testimony. Thank you for having me. I am currently the chairman for the Mayor's Commission on People with Disabilities. And like many other disabled Philadelphians, I rely on bus transportation very frequently. Like others, I go up to New York for me to see my parents, and then I go down to D.C. to see my sister. I'm here to urge all stakeholders in this room and in this city to open and maintain an accessible and safe intercity bus terminal. For ages, our city's approach to intercity bus riders, especially disabled riders like me, and maybe some of you here today, has been a mess. We cannot safely stick to our curb in Chinatown, nor can we accept a site at Spring Garden with no indoor shelter, no safe landing zone, and no elevator at the nearest subway stop. If you weren't freezing, you were getting soaked. If you weren't getting soaked, you were overheating or dodging traffic in your wheelchair. This is embarrassing for Philadelphia, which is the greatest city in the world. This is a civic issue and a moral issue, my friends. Disabled riders like me and my friends deserve better. For over a year, we've discussed potential sites for this terminal. These ideas come, germinate, and go. In order to take a real step forward on this issue, any permanent site must be accessible. Let's talk about what that means. I invite you all to close your eyes and imagine, no dream, with me. The ideal terminal is near multiple bus routes and a subway station with an elevator. It has indoor bathrooms, heat, and AC. Passengers and ticket holders can sit in a proper waiting room. What separates, my friends, what separates a bus terminal from a bus stop? Well, a terminal is safe, sheltered, and surrounded by restaurants and stores, basic things that every traveler should have access to, not just the travelers who drive. Disabled people, like me, really enjoy spending money, and we want to spend it here in Philadelphia, after all. Speaking of driving and parking, if you ever tried to drive or park in this city, you know, one, that it's a nightmare, and two, that by the time you find a spot, your meter's already expired. Thus, transit access is not some outrageous luxury, it is an ethical necessity for us all. Like all of you, my heart breaks each time I read about a traffic death or a pedestrian death. These tragedies are soul-shattering and preventable. Every time we design transit around curbside chaos, instead of thoughtful infrastructure and universal design, we put lives at risk, especially disabled lives like mine, especially cyclists, especially pedestrians like me. A new terminal, then, removes that chaos. No more riders waiting in the street, no more buses clogging the bike lane. Instead, we get off-street loading, a safe waiting space, and real dignity baked into universal design. Dignity and access not just for the 17% of the city, 245,000 Philadelphians who are disabled, but also older residents, new families, perhaps with babies and strollers, and more. Access means we all win. I know we all want the same thing. A Philadelphia where getting around is safe, reliable, and welcoming for everybody. A safe, accessible, permanent intercity bus terminal brings us closer to that vision. We want to be a city that takes equity seriously, so we have to show it then in the way we treat transit users, especially those of us with disabilities. I urge you now to make sure a permanent terminal is fully accessible. We can give Philadelphians the bus terminal that we all deserve without sending them on a scavenger hunt for an elevator. Thanks, everybody. I look forward to working with all of you to make this city safer, more accessible, and more connected. Just speaking to my good ear. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your testimony. What's going on?
Good afternoon. My name is Helena Gallant, and I serve as transportation advocate at CARI, the Center for Advocacy for the Rights and Interests of Elders. Thank you, Councilmember Young, for holding today's hearing and for the opportunity to present testimony on resolution number 250109 regarding potential locations of a new intercity bus terminals in the city of Philadelphia. CARI is a nonprofit advocacy organization that is empowering older adults, ensuring rights, fighting for dignity, improving quality of life, and combating ageism since 1977. CARI provides advocacy, information, and options counseling to about 2,000 people a year, helping ensure access to benefits, services, and supports, and we have had the privilege of working with many of your offices. CARI supports a permanent intercity bus terminal to be constructed in a convenient location that meets the following criteria: meets ADA accessibility standards, provides adequate shelter, has sufficient numbers of public restrooms, including ADA compliant bathrooms, provides a waiting area with seating, is close to SEPTA and other transit connections, has ample lighting, and is accessible and safe for all riders, especially those that use wheelchairs, walkers, canes, and other mobility devices, or riders who are blind or have other sensory impairments. There have been proposals made for a location near the 30th Street Station Transportation Hub, which would be a promising location to replace the now-closed Greyhound bus terminal at 13th and Filbert, as it is already a well-utilized location by other transit riders, with close proximity to SEPTA Regional Rail, Amtrak trains, and NJ Transit. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today. Preventing cuts to SEPTA is a top priority, not only to ensure that there are transportation options once a passenger arrives at a Philadelphia intercity bus terminal, but also for older Philadelphians who rely upon SEPTA to survive and thrive, and for their caregivers to have SEPTA service to travel to their homes. We look forward to supporting your efforts to ensure SEPTA's funding needs are met and to construct an intercity bus terminal in Philadelphia that is safe, accessible, and dignified for older adults. Thank you again.
I just want to thank you both for your advocacy for some of our most underprivileged populations here in the city of Philadelphia. Your advocacy, your voice is definitely needed as we continue this conversation because, again, we are the passengers of this particular service, and we want to make sure that it fits what the consumer needs, right? And we want to make sure that all consumers have the ability to enjoy the benefits of living in this first-class city that we have in Philadelphia. So thank you so much for coming down to testify.
Thank you.
We will now transition to our public comment on resolution 250109. As we're limited on time, we're going to ask anyone, we were asking to provide public testimony and limit your repetitious comments. So we have a lot of testimony today that we heard. And so if you could come up for a public comment and just present to us, your sentiments on this particular issue.
Alan Fisher, Judith Sachs, Jarrett Johnson, and Ted Zellers.
Please state your name and begin with your comment.
Yeah, my name's Alan Fisher. Good to talk to you, Councilman Young. I'm not going to go through the speech because I know we're short on time, but I think one thing that really summarizes basically most of what I wrote is a news reporter's quote about Penn Station's destruction in 1963. And Mr. Vincent says, one used to enter the city like a god, and now one scuttles in like a rat. And I think that really describes the discrepancy between people that enter at 30th Street Station and people that show up on the bus, which I've done both. And I think, like, most people have already mentioned most of the things that I've said on here, but the thing that I would say is that, like, we're in a new era of, I guess, people talking about construction and infrastructure and everything like that. And it really, I think, bothered a bunch of people here earlier in the back when one of the transportation people in the beginning of the meeting was like, oh, it's going to take 2 years to study this. That's kind of not how things should work. It shouldn't take 2 years to study the damn thing, and then actually maybe you get more processes and meetings after that, and it takes 5-6 years to get to a point where it's you agree on a point, and then you build the thing, and then it takes a decade or something like that. I think the thing that Philadelphia has over a lot of cities at the moment is that, unlike some of the California cities, which are kind of made fun of for this, which is that they might take 2 years to permit a house to rebuild from being damaged by fire, or like in San Francisco, they took like 5-6 years to approve a toilet or something like that. I think it's really critical for Philly to show that we aren't like that, and that we can choose immediately a location near 30th Street, because I think we all agree that's where it probably should go, and then move on from there and assign contracts, assign the things that we need to do, and get the thing built. Because I think that in the midterm, it's like you need to serve the customers, like the guy from Peter Pan said earlier, better in their current location or different location, but we should just move on to the long-term thing as fast as we can. And like I was looking at the property map around 30th Street, there's a 3051 JFK Boulevard that is owned by SEPTA. So that would be an appropriate location, in my opinion. And 3101 Market Street, which is owned by PennDOT. But both are parking lots, and both are near 30th Street Station. Otherwise, the parking lot next to the Sierra Building or whatever might work. But that's pretty much all I have to say, so thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ted Zellers. I live in Kensington. Thank you so much for having us. I'll try to be brief as well. I moved here in large part because of the public transit options. I sold my car after moving here, which was really exciting for me. I'd say about half my friends are in the same boat. Like, we're non-drivers by choice. It's what Philly has that's like such a cool thing about it that we really love about living here. I've also spent about 15 years crisscrossing Pennsylvania on Greyhound, FlixBus, Peter Pan, like you name it. And you name it, I've seen it, like the good, the bad, the ugly. I've stuck with InterCity Bus the whole time, but recently it's just, you know, the rain, the snow, the hot sun, the exhaust, the 18-wheelers, all this stuff with the curbside service has just been too much, and I've started skipping trips to see my parents in D.C. I've started skipping trips to see my friends in Pittsburgh, because it's just been so onerous and unpleasant, and, you know, my wife recently asked me, like, does she think our kids and their friends are still going to be driving around in gas-powered cars? And I said, I don't know. I mean, and when I go to D.C. and New York and our peer cities like that with these great intercity bus stations, I think, no, we're going to get there. You know, this is great. I feel seen. I feel like my choices matter. But in Philly, I feel like I have to shout to be heard, even though I'm part of the one-third of Philly households that don't have access to a car. And so, thank you.
Thank you so much
for listening.
Good afternoon. My name is Jared Johnson. I'm transit organizer for Fifth Square Advocacy. I'm here today to talk about Bill 250109. As you may have heard, when Greyhound left its longtime bus terminal in 2023 at Philbert Street, left a loop. It left a hole in the community. And as you realize, Spring Garden is not an adequate place for drop off passengers, and this is not acceptable and is embarrassing in a major city such as Philadelphia. This puts bike riders in danger and is costing residents and businesses dearly. As a Philadelphia native myself, the city of Philadelphia can be better than this. That's why I'm asking the council to find a permanent location for an intercity bus terminal with adequate conditions. There are a few examples that may come to mind and that may people might think about. So the first you already heard is the 30th Street Station, which is the best option. But I have another option, which is 7th and Ray Street, where the old police rotunda was. I walk around Philadelphia sometimes, like once a week, and I walk through that area. And it has a great place to park buses. It has wide open spaces, so I was thinking that would be a good idea. It's also a good connection for the Metro B line and the newly Paco Franklin Station that commuters can take to New Jersey and back. Of course, there's always the Filbert Street Station, now that the Sixers Arena has been canceled and scrapped. But once again, I think the 30th Street Station would be the best idea. It has good connections to the L and the trolley lines and New Jersey Transit lines, as well as Amtrak, so it's all rolled up into one. So, in conclusion, whatever decision that is made with adequate amenities with Greyhound, this will help commuters and will help people with disabilities greatly. And one more thing. I know that there's some of us from Fifth Square and Transit for Philadelphia, probably some of them have left, but for all those who decided to stay this long and want all this done, can I get a ride on? Not right on, but ride on. R-I-D-E, ride on. Ride on. All right, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Ms. McDonald, could you please call the next names for public comment?
Darlene Mancina, Gloria LaMorgia, Francesca Waldman, and Will Tong.
Thank you all. Please state your name for the record and begin with your testimony.
Okay, I'll start. And thank you, Councilman Young. I'm so appreciative of this and hearing everybody's testimony, and I will be brief. I'm a resident of Philadelphia, a long time. Advocate of public transportation, a long time, gave up my car a long time ago. I used the Greyhound terminal for a long time, and then it moved to Market Street, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe like we're doing this. The city of Philadelphia has moved all these buses here. And then when it moved to Spring Garden and 2nd Street, it was like shocking to me, I have to say. It was so disturbing. I felt it was a real equity issue. I thought to myself, how did the city of Philadelphia do this? It was enlightening for me because I started feeling like a second-class citizen. We were dumped, like, on the side of a highway. That's the way it felt. And I just, you know, to me, the call for doing something quickly, the dignity of everyone. People use buses sometimes because it's affordable. Sometimes it is the only way to get to point A and point B. Sometimes it's very intentional. And buses are an equalizer. We need to do better. And it has to be connected. Again, connectivity is so important. It has to be, you know, central to other, you know, modes of public transportation, accessibility for all. Anyway, that's all I have to say, because my experience was devastating. Last weekend, I took my niece, who had some mobility issues, and my sister there, and I felt shameful about the city of Philadelphia. I was completely embarrassed. It's like shocking to me that this has been going on for so long. We definitely have to do better. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for your sign as well.
Thank you for having this meeting. I really appreciate it. As a bus person, I never drove. I don't have a car. I always took SEPTA. I always took Greyhound. I remember when the Greyhound terminal was at 17th and JFK, before it was at 10th and Filbert. That's how long I've been taking Greyhound.
like she was saying, when you go to Second and Spring Garden, it's so sad. It's so debilitating for a big city, a sixth largest city in America. And we are like dumped under an underpass. It stinks like urine. It's horrible at Second and Spring Garden. 10th and Filbert wasn't all that great, but it was a heck of a lot better. But I just wish it wouldn't take 2 years for a permanent station. I think the city should really think long and hard about this, because there are a lot of people that take the bus, that go to Wilmington, that go, I used to go to Scranton 4 times a year to see my daughter and grandchildren. When you get off at Scranton, it's gorgeous. It's a bus station. It's a real bus station. Even Mount Pocono, Strasburg have a bus station. It was like coming back here. It's like a third world country. It's just unbelievable. Europe probably has better buses now that the German company owns Greyhound. But as a senior, I'm 77 years old. I cannot stand out in the heat. I can't stand out in the cold. So I wish council and the mayor and the planning commission, whoever, gets this started. It should have been started when Greyhound closed 2 years ago, but I want to see a new stadium before I go out of this world. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. My name is Will Tung. I'm a volunteer at Fifth Square Advocacy. I'm so glad that council is holding this hearing, is bringing light to this issue. This is something that's kind of been overlooked for the, you know, since 10th and Filbert closed. A wise man once said, "Don't tell me what your priorities are. Show me where you spend your money, and I'll show you what your priorities are," right? And it's budget season. I would love for council to join us in advocating for a better solution for our inner city bus riders, and for council to come to back that up with some funding for the administration so that they can seek a better solution. And I'm glad that council's here, council holding this hearing. I want this to be the last hearing on this, and I want us to find a solution. The clock is ticking. 2026 is going to come before we know it. And we want to invite the world, and we want to show them a good Philadelphia, the Philadelphia, you know, that we want to put on a good face for the world. So thank you very much.
No, thank you all for your comment. And just for the record, I want to note that the sign says everyone deserves toilets, shelter, access, equity. So thank you so much for coming down here to testify today. Ms. McDonald, please call any other names for public comment.
There are no more names for public comment.
Thank you so much. I would like to thank you all for coming down here today and joining us for this very important hearing. We learned a lot today. I learned a lot today. And hopefully, you know, we can work with our city to develop what we need to become, you know, to continue to be that world-class city that we are as we look forward 2026 and beyond. And with that, this concludes the business before the Committee on Transportation and Public Utilities. Thank you all very much for your attendance.